Hello, fellow homebrewers. JP here, and I want to introduce to you the brand new Brewbuilt X1 Conical Series available at More Beer. More Beer sells the highest standard in homebrewing equipment, and the Brewbuilt Conicals are just that. They're made from mirror-polished 304 stainless steel, and they come with loads of features that you and I have been looking for. They have a full 2-inch bottom dump valve, which will eliminate your clogging issues, while the sturdy base includes 4 reinforced legs, just like those big pro tanks do. More Beer also carries the Brewbuilt line of options and add-ons like casters, pressure kits, and even external glycol chillers. So you can find out more about the new Brewbuilt X1 conical uni tanks by going over to morebeer.com for detailed videos on the entire line of Brewbuilt conicals. You can trust Brewbuilt with your next fermentation, and you can trust More Beer to find the right conical for you. Brewbuilt at morebeer.com.
The mysterious Gram Box from More Beer brings you this Brewing Network Sunday session. See the Gram Box affordable control unit at morebeer.com.
Feels like work. Shooting the shit for 2 hours, drinking beer, and talking beer. What a wonderful experience.
Can we not have the barf bucket near my mixing board?
I think everybody can read the book.
I knew you were going to use this book as an excuse to quit doing this show.
Mrs. Bub, if you want, I can mail you the Bub Timer.
Yeah, Newcastle. Especially in the can. Have you ever had it in the can? No, I have not had it in the can.
Notice I closed my eyes and I concentrated really hard.
Now, live from the Brewing Network Studios in Northern California, this is the radio program for home brewers, craft brewers, beer lovers, and beer geeks. It's your only source for live beer radio that brings expert brewers together with, well, expert drinkers. This is the radio program with a head on it. This is The Session.
All right, welcome back to The Session, everybody. I'm all busted up today.
What happened?
My throat and my lungs are messed up. I fell on my face the other day and cut up my eye and bruised my cheek and chipped my tooth.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. I was hoping Doc would be here by now so I could explain to him that I need to go back to the dentist. Get my tooth
some repair work,
smoothed out.
Did you pull a Jamil and walk off the back yard ledge?
No, I did do it at Doc's. I fell over at Doc's house, basically.
Oh, well, that's a good lawsuit.
Oh, you're working on our art car for Burning
right.
Man.
Burning Man prep, sure.
So I spent the day in the heat and drinking some beer and, I don't know, got a little woozy or something. And
yeah, tripping over drunk, they call it.
Something like that. Yeah. Fell on my face.
Ooh, face plant.
Found out a neat trick. It was kind of a stitches-worthy wound right near my eye, but Schumann taught me a good trick. Super glue.
Oh, yeah.
You ever super glue a wound shut?
That's pretty
that.
Redneck.
I've heard of that, yeah.
Dude, it works like a charm. I didn't want to break. I'm too lazy to go to the ER, you know. Yeah. I just cleaned it up. But it was a pretty open gash on my eye. And I just thought, well, I can't leave it open. And Schumann comes in. Super glue it. We used to do it all the time. Put some super glue on that thing. It'll heal right up.
That's hardcore.
So really? I don't know. I didn't feel like going to the hospital. So. Sure enough, so I guess you just kind of clean it, and then you sort of hold the wound closed.
Oh, I see, pinch it closed.
And then you put the super glue over top of it.
Sure.
Dude, I can hardly tell it's there.
Yeah, just put it in the shape of a smile, that way, you know, you got a happy scar.
Yeah, exactly. So, that's what I did. Wow. I'll see how it comes out.
Isn't there like a warning label that says, don't apply near eyes, you know, go to the emergency room if you get it near your eyes.
Super glue your eyes shut.
Well, and I'll tell you, heed that warning, because just the fumes from the super glue got into my eye and burnt like shit. Uh-oh. It's not good.
Yeah, you're fucked.
You're going to lose that eye.
But I'm telling you, man, stop bleeding right away. And the thing about the super glue is that it dries instantly.
Yeah.
So you can kind of just hold the wound shut. You put it on there. And by the time you let go, the glue is doing its job. I'm telling you, I think it's going to work wonders. I don't even think I'll have a scar. I think I'll have a tiny mark with the new super glue technique.
That Schumann knows his shit.
He does.
Yes.
I always ask a redneck about cheap and easy fixes.
Did you disinfect?
I did disinfect.
Okay, good.
A little bit of, you know, some antiseptic wipe and some hydrogen peroxide.
Oh, yeah. Doc's has all that stuff.
I even threw a little Neosporin in there.
Oh.
I know what I'm doing. You
good
know,
concoction.
I need to go to the doctor to tell me, you know, give me $800 to throw a couple stitches on you when I can do it with a $2 bottle of super glue.
Make my own cocktails.
So we'll see. It doesn't feel infected or anything, so I think I'm doing all right so far. Except for this lung thing.
Except your fingers stuck to the side of your head. That's a problem, I guess.
That was a problem. Yeah. My fingers did stick together. You remember those? You're probably the only one in the room old enough, Tasty, to remember.
I appreciate that, yeah.
Remember the super glue commercial with the guy in the hard hat used to stick himself underneath a bridge?
Right, right.
Oh, yeah.
I believe that. I think it would really work. That's how good this stuff is.
Stuff's really good, yeah.
I mean, I had trouble getting my fingers apart after, yeah. You know. Anyway, kind of busted up. Even so, we have a great show planned for you today, and probably a show that's been in the making for several years now. Our guest will be Steve Dressler. He's the brewmaster at Sierra Nevada Brewing Company. That's right, the big one. The big old Sierra. And I'll tell Steve this story later. I've probably told everybody before, but they were my first craft beer. They're the brewery that turned me on to craft beer.
Me too.
Yeah, mine as
you
well.
Too, Scott?
Oh, yeah.
Scott's in here helping out today. He'll be running the chat room for you because Bevo, I don't know, it's a birthday to go to or something like that. So hit the chat now button. You can enter the chat room, and Scott will take care of you there if you've got any questions for Steve about Sierra Nevada. So this is one of the craft breweries that, you know, all of our listenership has probably tried, and most of you guys can get if you're in the U.S. I think they even export to Australia, actually.
It's in Europe, for sure.
And in Europe as well? Okay. So some of our Euro listeners might be able to get it, too. And so Steve's going to be on the line with us about 5:30, and we're going to be talking about not only all the beers of Sierra Nevada, which some of you will be surprised to find, like I was. You know, they make a lot more beer styles than you think they do. Right. They just don't distribute all of that beer.
Right.
But if you go to the brewery in Chico, I think you can try something like 20 styles of beer.
They got a big lineup there. Yeah.
So we'll be able to talk about a lot of those beers with Steve, plus some of the common ones. And if you've got questions, like I said, hit the chat now button or call us up, 888-401-BEER. You'll be able to get through that way, and you can ask him. Now, the other thing we're going to talk to him about that you guys know I'm always excited about, I think it's an interesting topic, and that is sustainability. And Sierra Nevada is one of the leaders in sustainability and brewing. If you don't know much about brewing, you might not know that it's actually a pretty wasteful process. Even us homebrewers, we use a lot of water. We use a lot of energy. How many refrigerators we have running in this house right now, Shad?
Half a dozen.
Like six refrigerators. We are not exactly green around here. And it's difficult to for a brewery to be efficient and to be green. But if you go over to SierraNevada.com and check it out, even before we get Steve in here to talk about it, they have a whole page about the environment and what they're doing. It blew my mind when I read through all of the different things that this brewery is doing, from solar panels to generating their own power through, they have their own power generators, fuel cell power generators. They reuse all the frying oil for fuel in their trucks. They reclaim their water. They reclaim CO2. They reclaim methane. It's amazing all the things this brewery is doing. So they're really kind of a leader in sustainability. And we're going to talk to Steve all about that today, too.
Maybe reuse brewer's piss.
Oh, I wonder what they would use.
Let's have a bunch of brewers run around there.
Do you think that's the house flavor?
Maybe.
Justin, you could use it to disinfect your wounds before you put super glue on them.
I probably could. Yeah. Ammonia. You think brewer's piss is a disinfectant?
If super glue is a cauterizer.
Yeah. I can't. Doc's, I think, on his way in now. I'm excited to hear what he thinks about my stitching method. Doc's kind of a redneck. He might go
He'll
for
go,
it.
Oh, yeah, that'll work.
Yeah, say, oh, we used to do that. I do it now. I do it in the office. Every time you That's come right. in, I put super glue in your teeth.
Yeah, just did that right to the gums. Kids.
Might be all that's holding my teeth in. I wish I could have found the chip and super glued that back onto my tooth.
We need a doc.
Right in the front tooth.
Oh.
It's more of a sliver than a chip. I didn't like take off a chunk, you know, you can't like see it from across the room. Which is good, because I would have been real disappointed about that. I probably would have cried. I like my teeth. I would have cried about missing a piece of them. Anyway. So Sierra Nevada on the program today, and like I said, 888-401-BEER, or join Scott in the chat room. You can also watch the happenings, the goings-on of the show by hitting the little television ad on our homepage, just that little TV. It'll bring you over to justin.tv/brewingnetwork, and that's where you can watch the live studio cam and hear audio of the show over there. It's very exciting. You can see Tasty.
Pick his nose.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Slamming back some beers. You can count how many beers Tasty has during the program.
Yeah, that's
a fun game.
And, another one.
Maybe people should guess early on in the show, Scott, how many beers will Tasty have? And then someone viewing the camera and in the chat room can notch, and the person closest at the end will have a prize for.
How many beers he will have finished by the end of the show?
By the end of the show. He's on one right now. I'll give you all a hint. And so someone in the chat room watching the video needs to keep an eye on Tasty and mark down the accurate number. Of course, Tasty, you'll have to mark down.
Yeah, I'll give the official one.
So that we have the real number.
Right.
And I don't know, it could be fun. See how drunk Tasty gets.
Pressure's on.
I wasn't going to get that drunk, but I guess I'll have to now.
Yeah.
Won't be any fun unless I drink a lot.
But that will be, that's the challenge. Well, people will have to, when they guess, they'll have to decide, well, based on what I'm hearing from Tasty, is he in a drinking mood or is he feeling conservative?
Oh, I see. You can predict.
And so it's predicting the number. They need to guess now.
I see.
Before you go for your next beer.
Okay.
These numbers need to be in.
So get your guesses in.
Yeah. Get them over to Scott in the chat room. Hey, Doc. How are you, brother?
Tired.
Are you? Been working hard?
Yeah, I was up till 3 welding, and I got up earlier this morning, started welding. I finished just kind of about an hour ago, cleaned up, and took a shower and came over.
Working on the art car, of course.
Yep.
Well, you just finished my story about working on the art car.
Oh, yeah?
Busted up my face and tooth working on it the other day. I cracked open my eye, sort of right here.
Okay.
And I chipped my tooth.
Which one?
It's my front tooth that you're going to have to take a look at. It's more of a sliver than a chip. It's like the front part, so it's not misshapen yet.
Nice.
But it's sharp and jagged on my tongue. So I knew you wouldn't be too happy about that, and neither am I. But my wound on my face, I wanted to ask you about this. So it was probably stitches worthy, maybe, you know, 2 or 3 stitches. But I don't, you know, I'm a man, Doc. I don't need to go get any
stitches.
Need
some battle scars?
So I super glued it shut.
Cool.
It's good, right?
Oh, yeah.
No problem with that.
Oh, yeah.
Squeezed it shut, put a little glue on there. You can hardly tell.
Oh, yeah.
See? Good. I told you. Doc's old school.
Oh, yeah. I think I glued my kid.
You do your kids that
I
way,
called
right?
I that. I knew it.
Yeah. You did.
Because, I mean, now, 5 or 6 stitches, you might want to go get the stitches, but 2 or 3.
Depends on how much super glue you got.
Super glue that thing, right?
Well, they've got an FDA-approved one called Dermabond.
Oh.
It's super glue.
Oh, it is. Yeah. It's just super glue.
Yeah, pretty much.
Stuff burns near your eye, though, kids. I will remind you again that even the fumes from the super glue will burn your eye.
Yeah.
That hurt.
Cyanoacrylate.
All right, so Doc approves. I'm glad.
Oh, yeah.
And you'll just have to do a little smoothing on my tooth. It'll be fine.
Well, Mike told me that something happened, and I thought maybe you just broke another one of my tools.
Oh, no.
No, just his
just
face.
My face. So yeah. you can rest assured it wasn't your tools, Doc. It was your friend's face.
Okay. I could, yeah, all right.
Can live with that. I'll give you the full story later.
All right.
But I will say that I had to clean up some drops of blood from your brew shed area.
Oh, okay. I got it.
So, but I cleaned up and I found some dirty rag that you had laying there to stop the bleeding, which is why I had to come home and like seriously disinfect, but
yeah, okay,
all is well.
All right. Okay.
All right, Doc.
So it was done on my property.
Well, don't tell your wife. I know she'd be more concerned than you, but yes, it was done on your property. But you know, Doc, it'll be a small lawsuit. You won't even feel it. You won't even notice.
I let the lawyers handle it.
Yeah, you won't even know I'm there.
Yeah.
It'll be fine.
Good.
But it did happen on your property, and I had fun doing it. I mean, I was having a lot of fun.
Well, that's a good thing.
Breaking teeth.
Yeah, breaking
teeth. Well, yeah, and then now I'm paying for it.
Okay. No, it'll be easy. I'm telling you, little buffing out, tooth will be fine.
All right, cool.
Yeah, it's no problem.
Hey, Tasty, Freak Brothers says that your JBA recipe got him a first place and runner-up in Best of Show in the Iowa State Fair competition last week, and he says thanks.
Nice. Way to go.
Wow. Another Janet's Brown win, huh?
It's getting out there.
Boy, that beer, I'll tell you. Every time. All right, Doc, Sierra Nevada is our guest today. We're going to be talking to Steve Dressler.
Okay.
We're going to phone him up. So we're going to talk about sustainable brewing and all the different beers of Sierra Nevada. Couple other announcements we have for you is the Brewing Network and More Beer will both be at the Eat Real Festival in Jack London Square. That's at the end of this month. I think it's the, what do I have here? 27th, 28th, and 29th. It's the weekend of the 27th, 28th, and 29th. It's a 3-day festival, and we'll be in the Beer Garden, which is where we should be. Come over and join us. More Beer will be doing some home brewing demonstrations on their one of their flat brew sculptures. and they'll be brewing every day. So if you've ever wanted to come check out one of the sculptures in action, you can do that. And come see us, too. We'll be doing some video and some audio down there and hanging out, selling T-shirts, stuff like that. So come see us. Of course, we'll also be at the Great American Beer Festival. Just got confirmation about that. And we're going out again this year. I'll be hosting several brewers panels from the Brewers Pavilion like we did last year. And then, of course, we'll have our booth set up there where we do whatever the hell it is that we do. I don't know what we do there anymore.
Strippers.
Strippers. Great.
Games and strippers.
I think Moscow will be there this year.
Stripping. Our,
Great American Beer Fest?
I think so.
Hell yeah. Looking forward to it.
You get to meet Moscow and harass our new producer.
They say I'm a lot hairier than Bevo.
That's true.
That's only partially true.
Yeah.
I don't know, I don't know what that means. I spent the first 5 minutes picking her hairs off of this mic cover.
That's disgusting.
It is. She really keeps this little stall. It's a sty. It was like empty Starbucks containers, and there was a crumbled up tissue.
Yeah, women are slobs.
Ugh.
They're the ones who come into your house and go, oh, it's a bachelor pad. But if you've ever been to an all-female house before, they're slobs.
It's really true.
Yeah. There's, like, bloody strings everywhere.
Oh, God.
It's disgusting, really.
All right.
Yeah, they get too much credit for being clean. They really do. They're horribly disgusting.
All right, so we'll be at GABF. I think Shad will be at GABF, but the trader's working for someone else.
Hey.
Boy, oh boy.
Gotta get tickets one way.
He got optioned out.
Yeah.
No.
What are you doing? Working with Randy?
Yeah. Something different.
Doing what?
You be the judge.
You know I'm going to send all our people over there just to fuck with you every...
Yeah, I need people to sign up. That'll make it easy.
Yeah.
Just come right over to the booth and pick them up.
Yeah. Change your name to Shat the Trader. Yeah, that'll be fun. So we'll all be out there as usual. Come see us. Now, the big announcement that I have for you in today's announcements is an all-new Brewing Network show. Now, we kind of alluded to this about a year ago, and it's been in the works for a couple years now, actually, and you've all been guessing about it. Most of you know, but we have an official start date, the topic, and everything. Sean Paxton will be doing a show for us, a cooking with beer, a pairing with beer, and everything food and beer show. It's called The Home Brewed Chef with Sean Z. Paxton, and I'll be helping him out on the program. And we're starting that on Thursday, August 26th at 6 p.m. So that's this month at on the 26th at 6 p.m. will be our first episode ever. Sean Paxton will be here in the studio. We can take your calls, and you can join the chat and do all of that fun stuff. It's going to be a once-a-month show for the moment, because we kind of need to figure out how much time we have to do it, how much production's going to go into it. Paxton's a busy guy, especially this time of year, and I'm just lazy. So once a month, and it'll be a good show. I'm excited about it. I think it's really going to, you know, kind of turn a corner for people in food and beer. You know, what we've done for getting out homebrew information about homebrewing, I think Paxton will be able to do for foodies who are excited about being able to cook with beer and pair beer and all of that.
Yeah, people are really looking forward to getting that information, I'm sure.
Yeah. So excited about that. Thursday, August 26th. Stay tuned to the Brewing Network for more information. We'll give you all that. There's merch in the store. You can buy T-shirts, stickers, hats, books. You can buy the BN app over in iTunes for your iPhone. And then you can listen on the road like Mike White does. It's his favorite BN product, the BN app. I should have him sponsor it for us. Should have his face on the app, that goofy smile he does. I was at Mike White's... I was at Gladstone's baby shower yesterday. Mike White's baby shower.
Right.
I got drunk with the Whites last night doing that.
No way.
Yeah. That's odd, huh? Even at the baby shower, you know. We were just hiding out in the back while all the girls were in with the presents and stuff. Drinking beer and hanging out. And anyhow, little baby Gladstone is due soon. Gladstone 005 White is what we named him on the last show. Doc, I think you missed that. So, anyway, what else? Subscribe and join the BN Army. It enters you into our More Beer donation giveaway every month. You can get all these updates over on Twitter and Facebook. hi, Jip.
Hi.
How are you, brother?
Good. How are you doing?
Doing good. Did another wheel fall off the Volkswagen?
No, I was out of town.
Oh, okay.
Drove back, a lot of traffic.
Gotcha.
Disneyland busy?
Here in Rush River. No, went out to the coast. Mm. Girlfriend's parents have a beach house.
Nice.
In Shelter Cove.
Yeah.
Which is like,
sounds like something out of a horror movie.
It kind of is. Like, the only, I understand, the only real houses are like vacation homes. Because everyone who lives there are like fishermen and they just camp.
The fishermen camp
because they're kind of migrant and whatever.
I see.
Little 9-hole golf course.
Yeah.
Is it north or south of here?
North.
Okay.
Yeah. Like 5.5 hours.
Oh.
So just bombed through, dropped her off, and came here.
Okay.
Yeah.
The chat room just flipped out, was like, Chipper has a girlfriend? They're very confused.
It is confusing, well, isn't it?
Confused me.
You meant you went with one of your friends that's a dude, right?
My cat's.
Yeah.
His cat's parents.
Let's clarify.
I went with Nate Smith.
Yeah. Okay.
But with the hair confuses me.
From the back,
it's all good, baby.
It's easily a girlfriend.
Yeah.
You know? People see you guys walking hand in hand on the beach from behind, and no one's going to yell out, homo, or any other...
They just think she has hairy legs.
Right.
And she does, apparently.
That she does.
Oh, my kids find it amusing that I told them your best friends are cats.
They find it very amusing.
Yeah, I wonder why.
Just like the rest of us.
Yeah. So, sorry about being late, but...
Yeah, no worries.
The 80, you know, we went to stop at Rush River for lunch.
Okay.
Roadhead.
The 101 and the 80 were just packed.
Yeah.
Tons of fucking people.
That happens on a Sunday.
I didn't know.
All right, Chat, you have announcements for us?
I do have announcements.
All right, Chat's announcements are brought to you today by Williams Brewing. It's one of our local homebrew shops here. You can go to williamsbrewing.com and check it out. They've got everything you need to brew a great batch of beer.
All right, AHA Rally's coming up August 21st at Naked City Brewing up in Seattle, Washington. August 29th, Avery Brewing Company in Boulder, Colorado. And November 6th, Maui Brewing Company. If you're in Hawaii, man, you're lucky. Go out to that one. AHA Club Only Comp's coming up. Sour Ales, which will be on September 9th. The Emerald Coast Beer Festival is also taking place on September 10th at 6 o'clock at the Seville Quarter in Pensacola, Florida. Sixth Annual More Beer Forum Comp. That'll be a big one. Entry deadline is August 14th. Man, I hear there's only a few hundred entries, so keep them coming.
Yeah, that's the best of show gets a conical, don't they?
They do. Well, man.
14, yeah, big one.
Yeah. Heated, really? Cooled, right? Ultimate?
No, standard.
A standard conical.
But it's the
even so, 12, man.
Hey, you know, it's the gateway conical.
It's pressurizable, though. It's the new pressurizable.
Ooh,
one, so.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah.
Sweet.
And so judging takes place August 28th for that one. Fourth annual Gulf Brew in Lafayette, Louisiana. Saturday. Oh, shit. Sorry, that already happened. Moving on.
It was.
Hope you all had a good time.
Go yesterday.
At Gulf City was really good.
Wow. Yeah.
I hope it went well.
The National Organic Brewing Challenge taking place this year. September 1st through October 9th, they're accepting the entries. This is the fourth annual. You can go to breworganic.com for all the details for that one. And then the Limbo Challenge is coming up for the North Texas Homebrewers Association. This is the world's first low-gravity homebrew competition. I think you get a gold lawnmower for the lawnmower beer and all that good stuff.
How low can you...
Yeah, it's pretty much session beers. Then NCHF is also taking place September 17th through the 18th, and that's going to be up in Lake Dobbins. If you're not going to be at JBF, that's a good one to check out. All the NorCal guys will be there. I think Tasty's going to be there.
I'll be holding court there, yes.
Yeah?
Cool. The only one, probably.
Yeah, Doze will probably have a lot of beers, and so it's a good tent to stop by, along with all the other guys up there. Go to nchfinfo.org for all the info. Then the Queen of Beers is taking place. Judging's going to be October 23rd.
I'll be there, man.
Yeah?
Yeah, sure.
Awesome. Yeah. If you want to register, go to hazeclub.org.
I do wish the Queen of Beers was a gay homebrew competition.
Yeah.
Instead
it's,
of a,
it's not?
It's not.
Let's make it that.
But it would be a lot more fun if it
beer
were.
Beer is super.
Why don't we make one?
We should. Well, because
the
we
first
don't wanna...
annual lunch meet
Castro Beer
Homebrew or Homo Brew Club
competition.
Competition.
Lunch meet sort of
it has a certain
already.
Ring to it, doesn't
yeah.
it?
Just flows.
And then the last one I have is October 2nd. That is the Wootown Brewers Homebrew Club Barley Legal Homebrew Comp. Entries are being accepted September 11th through the 25th.
Better check
and,
your neck.
Check them out. Wootown Brewers. That's all I got.
All right. Don't forget, Chat's announcements are brought to you today by Williams Brewing. Go to williamsbrewing.com and do us a favor. Buy something from them today or this week. You know, just buy something.
Somewhere.
They're a good sponsor. Been with us for a long time, and we love them.
I started with them.
Is that right?
Yeah. I used to just pour over their catalog and just order my next beers through the, you know, all their ingredients.
Yeah.
And order and stuff. So, yeah, that's who I started with.
No, they're still going strong. So go check them out. I have kind of long feedback, and I need to get to Steve by 5:30, so I'm going to wait on that. But I did want to cover a story just real quick that got sent to me. You guys seen everyone talking about the end of history beer. We talked about it last week, the latest, or the week before, the latest BrewDog marketing ploy where they put that $500 beer inside a dead squirrel.
Yeah.
You seen that, Doc?
No.
It's a bottle of beer, and it's a really high gravity beer or something. I don't know. Yeah. Some kind of special beer.
It's just ice distilled until it gets...
It's an ice box. So, and then they put the bottle inside a dead squirrel, like a stuffed dead squirrel.
Like the one we have?
Like the one we have.
Okay.
And it goes for like 500 pounds is how much the beer is.
Okay.
For one. So it's their latest marketing thing. Everyone's talking about it. Well, there's a blogger. Somebody sent me a link to this. He wanted to do his own beer. It's tomscott.com/beer. You can go to check out his beer blog, I guess. He came up with a cheaper alternative. And I thought it was interesting, so I wanted to read it to you. But he basically said, you know, he wrote this stuff to the BrewDog guys. He sent them his idea. He said, look, I can't afford your beer, so I've created the end of history on a budget. And what he did was he went out and found the cheapest can of beer he can find. It was, I think the can was like $1.99 or something like that. And he got a little stuffed bear, like a stuffed animal bear. And then he cut a hole in the bear's ass and pulled out some of the stuffing and shoved the can of beer up there and, you know, sewed it up again around the beer can. You can see pictures of it on the site with the little can coming. Actually, he duct taped the can.
This is giving birth to the can.
Into the stuffed bear's ass. And then he sent it along with a note to the BrewDog guys to see what they think about his idea.
Yeah.
And I thought it was a fantastic idea.
Did they get back to him?
I don't know. This was just posted recently, I think. I don't see a date on it, but I haven't heard a reply yet. Maybe if tomscott.com listens to this segment, he can keep us up to date on what the BrewDog guy
said. That'd
be
great.
I think it's a nice... I think if I were BrewDog, I'd go, you know what? We should do this.
Yeah,
it'd be funny. We have this ridiculously expensive one, and now we're going to send out a little teddy bear up the can up the ass beer to...
Yeah.
You know,
or if anything, go into the cellar and give this guy some good beer.
Right.
You know,
help a brother out.
Yeah.
Anyway, tomscott.com/beer. I don't know the guy. Someone just sent me a link and I thought it was funny. And there you go. Good stuff. All right. I'm going to take us to a quick break. When we come back, Steve Dressler from Sierra Nevada Brewing Company is with us. And I'm excited because I've wanted this guy on the show for quite some time. Get to talk to him about everything Sierra Nevada, plus sustainability in brewing, which is one of Jipper's favoritest topics.
I love it.
When it comes to sustainability and climate change. And
yeah.
And Tasty's doing sustainable drinking.
I think maybe it's really important.
Maybe a listener should guess how many Al Gore digs will JP get in during this interview. Hang in there. It's the session with Sierra Nevada. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Brewcasters. The Brewcasters on the Brewing Network.
Hey, Push, the new brewery's looking good.
Thanks, Finn. Piece by piece.
Well, let's fire her up. Whoa! Is that a new kettle?
Yeah, just got it brand new, but paid half price.
What? And that blade scale?
40% off.
The new tap handle?
$5 instead of 13. Got a new regulator for the brew stand, too, but $5 instead of 25.
Dude, where are you stealing all this stuff from?
Where else? The More Beer Deal of the Day.
Announcing the Beer, Beer, and More Beer Deal of the Day. Every day, a new fantastic deal from big items to small that will blow you away. Boil kettles, carboy carriers, sterile siphon starters, digital timers. Watch morebeer.com every day for a new deal, and you just might find the item you've been waiting for at a price you cannot believe. Hurry, because stock is limited on most items.
And that sweet Guinness cap, let me guess.
The More Beer Deal of the Day.
Yeah, I knew it. Come on, let's brew something.
Find the More Beer Deal of the Day at morebeer.com. Celebrity voices impersonated.
Nico, listen, our lawyers said that we had to do this for 1 hour, and after this, we don't have to talk to each other for 3 more months until the next meeting.
Kids, come on, let's get out of here.
I'm supposed to have more lines. I'm the professional. Hey, it's Sully.
And I'm Nico.
And we opened the 21st Amendment 10 years ago at 563 2nd Street in San Francisco, just 2 blocks from Giants Park, to make great beer and have a great time doing it.
That's right, because to us, the 21st Amendment is more than just the right to make beer. It's the right to experiment, to be innovative, and just do things differently. And so now, we're putting our craft beer in cans.
That's right, cans. You can find our world-famous Heller High Watermelon Wheat Beer at Brew Free or Die IPA in the Northeast, Northwest, parts of the Midwest, and Alaska in cans and on draft. So next time you're at your local neighborhood pub or good beer store, be sure to ask for 21st Amendment in cans.
Because everyone likes it in the can.
Tasty Crack Cans.
Tasty Crack Cans.
Hey, what are you doing, man?
Writing a review of WLP 400.
What? You're reviewing yeast?
Yeah. White Labs has home brewer reviews of all their strains. Are you new to these interwebs? Check it out.
That's awesome.
White Labs, your source for great yeast, invites all brewers to visit whitelabs.com to read and write your own reviews of all their yeast strains. Get real-world tips and tricks from other brewers who have made the most of their vials and post your own experiences. It's another way White Labs brings you closer to the best yeast on the planet.
And send.
There you go.
You misspelled flocculate, dude.
What?
White Labs. It's all in the vial.
When I order a beer, I want my server to know more about it than I do. I want someone who enjoys good beer and loves helping others enjoy it too. I want someone who knows how to pour a perfect pint for every beer style. I want a Cicerone.
The Cicerone Certification Program is creating the type of people who help you enjoy great beer. Home brewers and craft beer lovers know beer is more flavorful and complex than ever, and it takes some serious knowledge to store and serve beer right. Cicerones know beer. There are three levels in the Cicerone Program: Certified Beer Server, Certified Cicerone, and Master Cicerone. Cicerones are truly the sommeliers of beer. The best beer locations have a certified Cicerone on staff. Relaxed and unpretentious, Cicerone are tested on storing and serving beer, beer styles, flavor and tasting, the brewing process and ingredients, and pairing food with beer. Learn more about your next beer guide at Cicerone.org. Certified Cicerone, because it takes top talent to present a perfect pint.
What's up, BN Army? Jake and Mike here from Brewing TV.
Brewing TV is homebrew culture in video. Asking the big questions, who and why. We leave the how to the tubby know-it-alls.
Check us out at brewingtv.com.
The first webisode drops May 7th.
Like Crosley's pants in a Louisiana jail cell.
This is www.thebrewingnetwork.com.
Sit down next to it, grab yourself a paper towel, and watch those yeast have sex.
You're listening to the Brewing Network.
The Brewing Network, saving your life
one beer at a time.
Trying to drink away this bronchitis. I think it's working. I find that beer helps my colds a lot.
Yeah, thin things out a little bit.
It does. Mm-hmm. It loosens me up,
loosens,
you know?
The phlegm.
Yeah. Something about, I wake up feeling worse. That's weird, but it helps at the moment. I'm drinking my cough away so you don't have to hear me do it on today's program.
I like to cough my drink away.
You do, huh?
Yeah, it's kind of weird.
It's kind of odd. All right, welcome back to the session. Today is the Sierra Nevada show with Steve Dressler, and hopefully I've got Steve on the line here. Steve, you with us?
Yes, I am. Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, I'm so excited to have you on the program, Steve. It's something I wanted to interview you guys for a long time, so thanks for being here.
Thanks so much.
Now, yeah. I met Steve for the first time last year at the Great American Beer Festival, and he was on a What's New in Brewing panel with us, and I wanted to talk to Steve then about Citra hops, because a lot of brewers had started to use them, and certainly Sierra Nevada. But one of the topics that we got into and ran out of time was sustainability in brewing. So I kind of said to Steve then, hey, you know, I really want to get you on the show, and we'll do it then. So that's one of the topics we're talking about with you today, Steve. Is,
great.
Sustainability.
One of my favorites here at the brewery.
Perfect. The other thing, I mean, just to get us started is, you know, I assume that everybody's familiar with Sierra Nevada. And I know the history pretty well, but I like to have you tell some of it.
Oh, certainly.
I wanted to let you know that Sierra Nevada was my craft beer gateway beer, actually.
Awesome.
And it wasn't, I didn't fall in love instantly, because I was drinking, like, I mean, Olympia. I was drinking like Keystone Light and some real awful flavorless stuff. And my girlfriend's brother always had the Sierra Nevada at his parties, and I tried it the first time, and I thought, wow, that is just awful. That is, I don't know why anybody
call that beer. Oh,
yeah,
I couldn't relate to that because when I started working here in '83, and it was, at the time it was pretty aggressively flavored beer, with the bitterness, and
yeah,
I would always bring a case to whatever parties I was going to, and I mean, when people were drinking big at that time, they were drinking something like a Heineken,
right?
And I basically had to wean all my friends onto it as well. I think part of it, of course, it was always free. they were going for, but once you get your palate a little bit adapted to some more aggressive flavors, it's really hard going back. So people kind of got hooked on that hop thing at that point. So.
Well, Heineken is imported. I mean, let's be fair.
Yeah, but that was big.
Your party does notch up if you're serving Heineken. Yeah.
That's right. Prior to that, the old English 800 tall boys worked out pretty well.
That's right.
Still do, Steve. Still do.
Take one of those out of the freezer and you're halfway home. So
yeah. Well, and it, you're right, though. It didn't take me long. I mean, it took a few weeks of kind of, well, that's the beer that's here. I'm going to have it, a lot like your friends did with the free beer. But I'll tell you, when I did adapt, I just never went back. And I think that's the thing about it, is it's not just, getting your palate to learn about new flavors. It's that once it does, it really can't accept anything less.
Well, that's great. It is. It's, you go from a bland diet and start getting to some nice spicy foods and, a lot of flavorful foods. And it's the same thing. You're not going to go back to eating, Pablum and just plain old mashed potatoes. So, it's good stuff.
So give us a little bit of the history, Steve. And let me just tell you in here, too, we've got JP on the microphone.
How you doing, Steve?
Hi, JP.
We've got Tasty in here.
Hi, Steve.
We've got Chad in here.
Hey, Steve.
And I'm not going to ask why you call him Tasty.
That's probably a good idea. Yeah. And then we've got our resident beer scientist. We've got Doc in here.
How
too.
You doing?
Awesome, Doc. Nice to meet all y'all.
Just wanted you to know you'll have several voices coming at you. But
that's great. Well, I've got several in here, and I'm by myself, so no issues.
Several in your head already.
Perfect. So give us a little history.
Well, this is the 30th year of the brewery. Started in 1980. Ken did his first saleable batch in November, I believe on November 15th of that year. And his first one, first beer out was a stout. And he was doing the classic, pale ale porter stout scenario at that time. The brewery back in 1980 was incredibly small. I think the first year production was just a few hundred barrels, maybe between 400 and 500 barrels. And grew slowly at that point. I came on in January of 83, and I think my first year, we were getting up around 1,000, maybe a little 1,000-plus barrels per year. The brewery at that point in time was in some small metal Quonset huts that are a little bit south of the current location on 20th Street. In fact, the road at that time was called Gilman Way, and it wasn't even paved. The brewery originated in an old transmission shop. We were doing 5 and 7 barrel batches, mainly with old used dairy equipment that Ken had scrounged from some scrapyard sales and from some used equipment dealers here in the valley and some places south of here. Put the brewery together, and we were over there on Gilman until between 88 and then 1989, we moved over to the current facility on 20th Street. At that point in time, we opened up the 100-barrel brew house. It's a used brew house that Ken bought in Germany. And if you've ever been to the brewery here and been to the pub, it's the brew house that you can see through the window when you look from the restaurant.
It's a big jump.
It was a big jump. That was one of the biggest challenges of my career going. At the time, we had upscaled our equipment to about 15-barrel batches. Mm-hmm. And for the home brewers and whatnot out in your audience, when you're upscaling your recipes, it's not linear. I mean, if you want to go tenfold, you don't just multiply everything by 10. Your utilization of raw materials changes quite a bit as you change your brew size. So That was a huge challenge for us, and it was there was a real imperative nature of getting the brew house going. We'd been really scrimped for product at, going through that time, and so we really were in a bit of a push to get the new facility running as soon as we could. So we did our first batches here in right at the beginning of 89. And we ran that brew house, the 100-barrel brew house, until 1996, going into 97. We did a lot of expansions over the course of that time. When we came online in 89, we kind of thought, you know, we could do 50 to 60,000 barrels, somewhere around 50,000 barrels out of this facility, you know, with some additional tanks and whatnot. And we realized within the first 12 to 18 months that what we had opened up with was woefully undersized. And so we went through a series of almost yearly cellar expansions going into 1996. 1996 was one of the craziest years from a production point here at the brewery. I think I ran that brew house over there round the clock, 24/7, except we shut down for Christmas Day and our mandatory boiler inspection.
Wow.
But we brewed through everything, the company parties, all the holidays, everything trying to meet demand. The early 90s were incredibly frenetic times for craft brewing. We would go 25-30% production increases on a yearly basis. 1996, I believe, was the year that we actually had to ration Celebration Ale, and we weren't able to ship it east of the Rockies, which gave a lot of people a great deal of angst.
Right.
And so got a lot of hate mail, too.
Really?
So we really were pushing to get the new 200-barrel system online before Celebration Ale season in 97, which we did accomplish. And we've been expanding the facility over here from a cellaring capacity ever since. So right now we've got a great mix of brewing capacity and fermentation. And so this year we're hoping to brew close to or right around 800,000 barrels we're on a pace for.
Wow.
Or actually for sales of 800,000 barrels, which would be huge, you know, when you think we went from 1,000 barrels back in the day or even less than that.
Yeah.
And so the growth has been wonderful. We've always stayed to our philosophy of quality is the number one thing that we take care of here. And, you know, the quality of the beer, the quality of the facility, and just the quality of the environment that we work in. And it's, you know, for my career here now in over 27 years, it's one of the things that I'm by far and away the most proud of.
As
the brewery grew, we were able to expand our product line quite a bit. Celebration Ale was on in 82. Bigfoot came on in 82, 83. We expanded our seasonals now so that we have a four-seasonal lineup, which has changed a little bit over the last few years as we've kind of inserted different styles of beers into the seasonal program to see what works real well, and also to give people a little bit of change up once in a while.
How many beers would you say you do in total out there?
I've got 16 different handles over in our tap room.
Okay.
And those change quite a bit. On a yearly basis now, we're probably doing, we've got, I'd say close to 20.
Wow.
You know, with some of the limited releases and the seasonals, you know, the Harvest Ales have expanded into a three-beer format. We did the Sierra 30 series for our anniversary this year. That was four beers. And then we do some real special beers, some small batch one-off beers in our pilot plant. We actually, about 4 or 5 years ago, put in a 10-barrel brew house again. And so we have a lot of fun over there doing. We have a Vienna-style ale on over in the tap room right now. We do some Rausch beers over there. Some real fun, different hoppy beers with a single varietal hop placement in the brew. And so it gets very, very fun.
It seems to me that over the last couple years, I've noticed more and more specialty beers coming out on the taps and in the bottles that, that you're distributing. Is that right, or did I just never notice all these different varieties?
Oh, no, it
is.
You know, we've, for so many years, you know, we were basically battling to meet demand.
Got it.
And after 97, and we had a little bit of freedom of movement, we were able to play around a little bit. So, you know, last year Torpedo came out.
Yeah.
We finally were able to increase our product line and do a real nice IPA. Shortly after that, we came out with the Keller Weiss, which is a very nice, truly Bavarian style of Hefeweizen with some real nice banana and clove notes in it.
It's very good.
As opposed to the American style.
Have you had that one? Well, a Tasty has, I
yes.
guess. I've not had it, but I already had a listener question come through about that for you, Steve.
That was a fun one. That one required a tour of Bavarian Hefeweizen breweries last year, which that was tough duty.
yeah, that's a tough job you have. Well, that was basically the question. Eagle Dude, who's in our chat room, he wanted to know what German beer inspired your Kellerweiss.
Well, you know, the beer was actually from a very small Hefeweizen brewery called Gutmann.
Okay.
And we had tried that beer. A gentleman that lives in that area works on our computer programming for the brewhouse automation. And as he would come back and forth, that was kind of like a small brewery in his area that he really liked. And he brought us some bottles of it, and it was really the flavor profile that we were looking for.
Okay.
Prior to that, we would do an American-style wheat beer, which a lot of craft breweries do, and that was just with our regular ale strain of yeast. Very nice beer, but it wasn't really true to what we wanted. And so we went over and visited the folks at Gutmann. We also went to Andex. We went to a number of different breweries over there, met with the brewmasters, toured their facilities, got a little bit of insight into their fermentation profiles and their beer handling techniques, and we came back and hit it pretty good from a flavor profile that we wanted. We played around with that style on a draft-only format for a couple years, but never really got the balance of flavor and aroma that we wanted. And so the trip was awesome. We learned a lot. The brewers were incredibly generous with their information and time, and so they really helped us pull off what I think is a phenomenal beer.
Did you use their strain of yeast, or did you get your own?
Yeah, we actually started playing around with the Gutmann strain, and that's we had the brewmaster and his assistant over at last year for a visit. We did a collaborative brew with them in our pilot brew house, and they actually did a Weizenbock that was incredible, real nice. Heavy wheat beer, and they had a lot of fun with some hops that we had available to them, hopped it up quite a bit, actually even did a post-fermentation hopping with it.
Wow.
We served that over in our tap room, and it was just beautiful. And so we're actually we've been using the yeast that they use. They were really quite amazed that we could come so close to the flavor profile with markedly different brew house techniques, but they were favorable of what we were doing. They're great folks. And so hopefully within the next year or so, I'll be able to send a couple of my guys over and have an opportunity to brew with them.
That's pretty cool. You'd think that they'd be a little, even if they gave you all the information to brew a great Kellerweiss, that they maybe would be a little stingy about the yeast and say, well, this one's ours.
Yeah, you know, we were really flattered with that, you know, particularly when they came over and we went over and visited them on the tour, as I mentioned, and when they had a chance to meet Ken and then come over this way and see what we were doing, Ken's personality and the personality of their brewery, it just kind of all fell in place.
That's cool.
It was a wonderful time.
What kind of fermentation temperature to get that banana clove flavor just right?
We run that beer. We put it into the cellar just below 70 degrees, and we let it ferment up, I think, to about 74, 75 degrees.
Okay.
It's all done through our open fermentation system. And one of the things that we learned with these Hefeweizen yeasts you know, with the ale strain of yeast, we would do a fermentation, and at the end of fermentation, we would crop the yeast. So we'd chill the beer down a little bit and let it settle to the bottom, and then crop it, which we do with our pale ale and all of our ales. And what we found from generation to generation was the beer would really lose its flavor. The banana and clove would just really fall down to nothing in a very short amount of time. And so what we learned over there was they just basically never let the fermentation stop. Their fermenters are set up so that they can do a really nice top cropping. Everything's done with an open top cylinder conical tank.
Mm-hmm.
And so they top crop at high Kreuzen. So the fermentation never really ends. And so the yeast just continues to go as it would in peak fermentation.
Wow.
We brought that back here, and I can do some top cropping, but not as much as I can, as I would need to from my open fermenters. All the beer goes through the open fermenters. We move it at high Kreuzen, and then what we actually do at the peak of fermentation for a pitch, we do a volumetric beer pitch. So it is a Kreuzen. So we'll bring back 20 barrels for another 200-barrel fermenters. And so the yeast just runs constantly like that. And so we've been able to keep that peak flavor and aroma profile going. That was really the main thing that we needed to overcome.
Wow.
Did you find that because the yeast basically were separating some, the ones that went to the bottom, the ones with the top had different characteristics?
You know, I don't know that that's really it. I think, I think for that particular strain, once the fermentation was over, and it could have, you know, when we were taking it off the bottom, maybe the yeast wasn't quite as healthy. But for whatever reason, it just totally lost its flavor profile.
Yeah.
So now when I'm brewing that beer, we get a propagation going from the lab, and then we get into fermentation. I'll brew for 2 to 3 weeks and get it all cellared away, and then we package that out as required, and then I start another propagation again.
Mm.
Yeah, I was just wondering, you know, I have read that depends on where you take your next yeast sample from for the next batch. And if you keep taking it from the bottom and those are the ones that aren't producing the flavors you want, you're going to kind of perpetuate that.
That's what you do. You know, when you crop, or however you do crop, you're absolutely right. You end up, whether you want to or not, doing somewhat of a pre-selection of your yeast. And so, you know, the older the yeast cell, you know, they're bigger, and things do settle to the bottom by gravity, and even with a single cell. And so your oldest yeast, particularly in a cylinder conical, is going to be at the bottom of the cone. And so with our ale yeast, for instance, we always pre-purge a set amount out of the bottom of the cone before we crop, and we're looking for a certain layer within that cone, of that wedge, if you think of it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we always use from generation to generation, and that's that way we maintain the consistent flavor profile in our ales. With the Hefeweizen, evidently you just take it right off the top. So.
Mm. Now, you guys, something different than a lot of craft breweries, probably most craft breweries, and more aligned with the bigger guys, you guys have a real lab there to be able to study these things, right?
Oh, we do. You know, we actually, we've got a couple, three different labs here. And going back to the original brewery, right when Ken opened the brewery, he had the forethought to put in a quality control lab. So from day one, we were running micro, and we were doing tests on the beer to make sure that the beers that we were putting out for public consumption were clean, you know, from a microbiological point of view. And I think that was one of our real keys to success.
Yeah.
As I speak to groups, you know, even in a pub setting, you know, there's some things that you can do as far as having a lab to maintain quality and consistency of flavor. But we've got a very nice quality micro lab here, and we also have a state-of-the-art R&D lab in conjunction with our pilot plant. And so we can do beer analysis and research on beer from a scientific point of view like any of the big guys, and probably do more so now.
Now, you know that the guy whose business card says Sierra Nevada R&D is like the envy of all of his friends. I mean,
yeah. You know, the brewer over there, the gentleman that that runs the R&D facility, Gil Sanchez, he came out of Miller And they, during some of their work, they started downsizing a little bit within their lab system. And so we were fortunate enough to pick him up. And then the gentleman that runs the brew house over there, his name is Scott Jennings, and he came on and worked for me for a couple, 3 years. And then when we opened that facility, we moved him out back. And he's a very well-educated brewer, excellent formulator, and just has a real great sense of what he's doing. And so I get to live vicariously through him now.
Nice.
He gets to, he'll do 3 or 4 new beers a month out there sometimes. So at least 3 or 4 a month. So it's a hell of a lot of fun.
When you're doing a beer, you talked about your pilot brewery. And you're trying to dial it in. How big's your pilot brewery?
10-barrel batches. And so we'll do either 20 or 40 barrel fermenters.
And who gets to try these?
Yeah. Are you doing that or?
Yeah.
Well, you know, as far as the formulation, Scott and I work on those things together. Some of the beers directly come from me if I've got something going on. Some of the beers come from a lot of the beers that we've been doing lately. We've got this great fun thing we do called Beer Camp. And I think I mentioned it, Justin, in one of my emails to you. And we actually bring in groups of people from around the country, sometimes distributors, mostly people from different accounts that serve Sierra Nevada beers. And they'll come in a group of anywhere from 8 to 12 people. And they get to spend a day here at the brewery touring around and hanging out. And then the next day, at the end of the day on Thursday, generally, they put together a beer that they would like to brew. It's straight out of whatever ideas they come up with on a consensus. I've got almost anything around here that you need. We probably have 20 different hop varieties and at least that amount of different malts on hand at any point. They put together a beer. Scott helps them with the formulation, and they brew it. We cellar it and keg it up for them, ship it off to their accounts, and then we serve it here in our tap room. And so we probably do 25, close to 30 of those a year now, and so that's another 25 beers a year that we do just kind of like off the cuff.
Right. That's fun.
And that's a hell of a lot of fun.
We had a couple of listeners actually come through Beer Camp there. And they,
oh, great.
Yeah, they. I don't remember how they got picked, but they won it.
They won first place in the National Homebrew Competition.
Oh, yeah. That's okay. Doc, it was in Oakland, right?
Doc and I had
tickets. We did the golden ticket thing. And so,
Tasty and I had golden tickets too, but we couldn't make it
that year.
Damn it.
Yeah, so Ken came, we did that in conjunction with the AHA. He happened to be one of the keynote speakers.
Oh, yeah.
Down there last year, and so he said, "God, what a great way to let some people come in," and they had a ball, and so we're doing that again this year, and we're also doing a couple of public contests. I saw some of the videos that people have submitted as to why they should be able to come in and brew in Beer Camp, and they're absolutely hysterical.
Nice.
So we'll be doing one with a group from California, and then we'll be doing another group with people from around the country.
That's really cool. I got to meet Ken once also, and he's just a real, obviously a very successful man, but really down to earth, and still, you can tell he still loves homebrewing, and that's kind of cool.
He does. That's where his roots were from. Before opening up the brewery, he actually had the homebrew shop that's here in Chico, and he started that homebrew shop and then sold it, I believe, in 79, 80.
Okay.
Well, I started homebrewing in 79, and he was still there. So right around in 80, and that was helped, get a little bit of the seed money to start the brewery. But he started homebrewing early in life I started homebrewing when I was in college. But, he's got a great appreciation for the art, and a lot of the guys here on staff still homebrew, and it's awesome. I mean, what a great hobby.
Yeah.
Great mixture of science and creativity, and it's really not a bad thing to enjoy at the end of the day.
Now, back in your early days at Sierra, when there really weren't a lot of craft brewers in the country,
no.
Did you ever imagine that Sierra Nevada would be where it is today?
Oh, no, never. I mean, that's why when we moved over here, and we're thinking, okay, with a little bit of luck and And, you know, the market was good and everything. You know, if you know that 50,000 barrel range, I mean, that was a good, that was a big brewery back, you know, in the late 80s.
Yeah.
And, you know, we figured, well, we could, you know, we could buy cars and stuff and have a living.
And put gas in it. Right.
You know, maybe get a mortgage in the works there at some point.
Own a dog.
Yeah, you know, and the way the brewery has grown, we never dreamt of anything like that. There wasn't anything around at that time, you know, Anchor Steam, of course, was the role model. You know, they were out there and doing great things, and they were kind of pushing around in that range.
Yeah.
And so we thought, my God, if we're fortunate enough, we could someday do something akin to that.
Right. Well, now, where are you in relation to other craft breweries? Because to me, you look to be the biggest.
Yeah, you know, from a single point of brewing, you know, from a single entity, we are. You know, Sam Adams is in. They're in the craft category.
Okay.
And they're twice our size.
Okay.
And then we come along as number two.
I see.
And then I believe number three now would be New Belgium.
Okay, right.
And they're I believe half to two thirds our size, somewhere in there. I don't have all those figures in front of me.
Right.
And I don't, you know, those are the numbers that I don't really crunch on too much. But the pale ale is the number one. It's the number one pale ale in the country, and
okay.
You know, it's from a private ownership and a single entity brewery. We're right up in there.
Right. Well, and I think now that's
from overall brewing, we're probably number seven in the country, something like that, seven, eight.
Oh, okay. Because you have to count groups together.
Yeah, and that's what the big boys.
They're contract brewing.
Right. Well, see, that's the and the only reason I asked that question is because, to me, it's impressive to grow to your size and still produce beer that craft beer geeks like us and my listeners still go to time and time again.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of the larger companies go away from that, you know.
Mm-hmm, yeah, Ken's really into the different flavors. And, you know, it's one of the beauties, too, of even being privately owned. I mean, there's one owner, you know, there's no investors, there's no board of trustees, and
right.
And nobody that you have to make happy at the end of the day other than Mr. Grossman. And so, you know, if he wants to do something, he does. And so if it's a beer style, a flavor, raw materials, equipment, whatever goes into the brewery, you know, if he's happy with it at the end of the day, that's all that matters. It's not only about the ROI, the return on investment.
Yeah.
It's about the quality of the operation and the quality of the product.
I wonder if Ken would be interested in adopting a 32-year-old successful beer radio entrepreneur.
I don't want
to. You know,
be
I don't know. I'll put it to him, but yeah. I've been asking him to adopt me since I was about 26. So I don't know.
Right. I might have a work ahead of me.
Might have a hard time doing that.
Right.
But you know, his personality. That's the way he's very. He's brilliant. Obviously, very unique individual, and he has. He stayed true to his brewing roots the whole time here.
Right.
If he ever wants to own a internet radio show,
right.
The Sierra Nevada session sounds pretty good to me.
Yes, the Sierra Nevada Sunday session.
Yes.
That's right.
Yes.
Now, before we go to break, since we're for sale. Since we were talking about a couple of your seasonal beers, one that everyone's talking about, and I unfortunately couldn't find it on my shelf near me, is the Tumbler.
Oh, yeah. It's just been out. I was gone in July. It came out about the middle of the month. So it's only been out there about 3-4 weeks now at best.
Okay.
And it's a really nice nice beer. We had a brown ale that we'd been doing draft only for quite a few years. We brought it out for a very limited seasonal, I'm thinking about 4 years ago, 5 years ago, and it went over really well. And we were looking for something to put into that fall niche and put in between Summerfest and our celebration ale, which is a really tough time for a seasonal, you know, and Celebration Ale is locked into that October 1 spot because it's so keyed onto the hop harvest.
Okay.
And so I did some reformulation on our brown ale, and what we really wanted to try and do here, again, going from a freshness point of view, was get the freshest roast malts that we could possibly get for that beer. And so we're getting some real fresh roasted crystals from a supplier up in the Northwest. And then just to give it some flavor complexity, I thought about inserting just a tiny little bit of smoked malt into the beer. Give it a little bit of dryness and a little hint of some different flavors there. So it's not even a percent of grist. And we had a smoker from our restaurant that we weren't using anymore. So actually we did some of the smoked malt for the beer for every batch right here. And we would smoke it right during the week when we were brewing. And so the flavor from that malt was just incredible. We were doing a dry smoke with it and using some local almond wood and some almond and some hickory. And the malt came off beautiful. One of my guys was running that project for us. He had a hell of a lot of fun, and it really gave the beer a nice touch.
I did have it a couple weeks ago, and I liked it a lot. It was
good. Thank you.
One of the nicer Sierras I've had in a while, and I was hoping to have it today, so I at least wanted to ask you about
it. Well, I've got a 24-ounce in my fridge, so...
I'll come on by.
Yeah, we'll be over.
There you go. Well, next time I do this, I'll be down in the studio with you guys, and so I'll bring gifts.
Perfect. Well, and you know, I don't know why I didn't think about this earlier, Steve. We should have just had Ken fly you down in the private...
Yeah,
there must be a private jet, right?
Yeah, or helicopter.
I mean, come on.
Well, he leases a plane on occasion
so we can
take care of things a little bit more time efficiently. But he's not the type that's ever going to own a plane. But it's nice,
right.
You know, people's time here gets so tight, so it is nice to get in and out of a place in a day.
Well, know this, if you and Ken ever flew down to be on my show in Little Pacheco, I would probably consider myself a huge success and I could retire. Just that would
well,
be
the airport really close by.
Yeah.
There you go.
Okay.
That's awesome.
We're going to take a quick break, if that's all right with you.
No problem.
Okay. And what I want to do when we come back is talk about some of the sustainability practices over there, because they've
awesome.
Really blown my mind. But I thought we could start that conversation with, I did find a bottle of the Estate Homegrown Ale.
Oh, there you go.
So
great.
I'm going to pour us some here at the break, and we'll talk about that beer and sustainability when we come back.
Awesome. Thank you.
All right. Hang in there. It's Steve Dressler from Sierra Nevada, and we're going to be talking about some good stuff. 888-401-BEER is the number, or join Scott in the chat room to ask questions. Hang in there. It's The Session. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Brewcasters on the Brewing Network. Publications is proud to announce their newest release, Yeast, the Practical Guide to Beer Fermentation by Chris White and Jamil Zanishev. The Practical Guide to Beer Fermentation is a resource for brewers of all experience levels. Chris and Jamil thoroughly cover yeast selection, storage, handling yeast, and how to culture yeast. Learn how to set up your own yeast lab, the basics of fermentation science and how it affects your beer, plus step-by-step procedures, equipment lists, and a comprehensive troubleshooting guide. Professionals and homebrewers trust Dr. Chris White, who founded White Labs Yeast more than 15 years ago. And Jamil Zanishev is one of the most respected and most awarded homebrewers in history and co-author of Brewing Classic Styles with John Palmer. Yeast, the Practical Guide to Beer Fermentation by two of the most trusted names in commercial and home brewing. It's proudly available soon from Brewers Publications.
Hi, this is Push from the Brewing Network, and I want to tell you about the Brewmaster's Warehouse and how you can get 10% off your next order. I'm a pretty techie guy, but I've never seen an online store like this. It's awesome. Go to brewmasterswarehouse.com and click on Brew Builder. You can whip up a custom recipe so easily even Sven could do it. Seriously, it's slick. You can share your recipe with your own logo and notes to the Brewmaster's database if you want. And the best part, it keeps a running tally of the beer you're building while you're doing it. Then, bam, click Buy Recipe and your cart is filled and ready to go with helpful suggestions in case you forgot something. This thing is amazing. Brewmaster's Warehouse is run the way a home brewer would do it, with great service, fast turnaround, and $6.99 flat rate shipping. Brewmaster's Warehouse and the Brew Builder blew me away. Check it out today at brewmasterswarehouse.com. I'm serious. And don't forget to put BNARMY in the discount code box for 10% off your order. Check out brewmasterswarehouse.com. Cheers.
BN Army members. Are you looking for a discount on hops? Keep listening. Nico's Homebrew Supply at NicoBrew.com has hops by the ounce and by the pound. Choose from varieties like Amarillo, Centennial, East Kent Goldings, Holler Tower, Simcoe, Summit, Tomahawk, Warrior, Willamette, and more. And adding new varieties all the time, mini for less than $20 a pound. Whether a couple ounces at a time or an 11-pound bag, all hops are shipped vacuum-sealed and frozen straight to you. Nico's Homebrew Supply offers store-wide $5 flat rate shipping and won't waste your money on unnecessary overhead or advertising. They're going bare bones and passing the savings on to you. The staff at Nico's Homebrew Supply loves to brew and is committed to keeping homebrewing affordable and accessible to anyone who wants to join in this great hobby. And for a limited time, use coupon code BNARMY at checkout for a Brewing Network discount. Visit NicoBrew.com. That's NikoBrew.com for your hops and more. NicoBrew.com, your bare bones buddy in the brewing business.
And now, Northern Brewer brings you another installment of The Time Brewers. When last we left our heroes, they found themselves in 19th century Burton-upon-Trent.
Ah, Merry England.
Something is amiss, my friends. Be on guard.
Are these casks of white Zinfandel will stand the Queen's men in good stead in far Bangalore?
Oh, hell no. Blush wine out of Britain be worse than microwaving a kitten. Maharaja Dodgers drinking pink be vomiting predominant on a subcontinent.
Oh, dear, you can't drink blush with Vindaloo.
Oi, what should I do? Ship hog's heads of this high carbonate water?
No, sir. Please, wait just a moment.
Well, bless me. A parcel from the future, from one Northern Brewer.
Use this Malice Auteur, my good man.
EKG at a high rate per barrel make ladies wet like Colin Farrell. Now quit Burton ruining the Burton Union and get Burton brewing.
Forgettest thou not the bog myrtle?
Northern Brewer is your one-stop homebrew supplier throughout the entire fermento chronosphere. The widest selection of quality malt, hops, yeast, $7.99 flat rate shipping, and keep that nasty-ass bog myrtle inside your sackcloth, Brother Abelard.
My stars, but this India Pale Ale is better than wine. Thanks, Time Brewers. Thanks, Northern Brewer.
Our work here is done, my friends. Now, to wherever we are next needed.
Tune in next time for the continuing adventures of The Time Brewers.
Ewa, what's it feel like?
Take awesome and multiply it by two.
Yeah!
Spraying live beer radio all over your face.
Can't get any better than this, baby.
It's the Brewing Network.
Listening to the Brewing Network. Because like beer, radio shouldn't suck. Yeah!
Welcome back to the program. Thanks for hanging out with us. It's The Session, and live with us now is Steve Dressler from Sierra Nevada Brewing Company, hanging out all the way from Chico. All right?
Yep.
Next time he's promised to come down with gifts. You guys heard it here.
Now he's going to come down to Pacheco.
Yeah, lovely, yeah. Pacheco.
Hopefully the gifts are a couple co-eds from college.
There you go.
Do you have a pretty strong intern program there at the brewery?
Interns? Yeah. We just started one this last year, but not a lot. You know, we're doing one now. We started one this summer an intern program for employees' children, kids if they're over 18 that have an interest. Just a little summer program. We bring some interns in to work in our R&D facility. We had a gentleman from Weinstephan in Germany.
Nice.
Earlier this summer that was working on his thesis. And so we do some things of that nature. And we're looking at expanding a little bit with some production internships. You know, we have got a great relationship with folks down at UC Davis.
Oh, yeah.
And with their fermentation science program. And so hopefully we'll be able to get a little bit something going with them.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
All right. So in front of us, to kind of kick off our conversation about sustainability, I have the Sierra Nevada Estate Ale.
Yeah.
And I like this beer a lot. It's probably one of my favorite Sierra Nevadas. It's just a real rich, kind of earthy character that I like in an ale.
That's been a fun project. You know, we'd been growing some hops here on the property for about 5 years, and we were using those doing some wet hop beer, and we called that beer 20th Street. Very small amounts, and we did that in the pub and for some local accounts and special. Then last year, after we completed our rail spur, we put in a rail spur to try and get a lot of our incoming, mainly my malt, the raw materials off the road to get some fuel savings.
Yeah, I'm going to ask you about that later.
We put in the rail spur, and when Ken bought that property, we put in the spur, and we ended up having about 30 to 35 acres left over. It had some water rights on it, and so in order to keep the water rights, we needed to put something in the ground, so why not put in some barley? So we've been growing some barley. This is the second year now. And with our own hops and our own barley, we had that barley malted with a small malting company that we have a relationship with. And so last year was the first that we did a beer that was 100% estate grown materials, raw materials. And it was absolute blast.
That's impressive.
So we're growing Cascade and some Chinook and some Citra. We expanded our hop yard now to a little over 9 acres. I think the barley now is 35 to 40 acres. We put it a little bit more in there. Mm. This last year, we took it a little bit farther, had all the acreage certified as organic, and we just completed an organic certification of the facility here. And so this year, when that beer comes out, it'll be our first certified organic beer as well. So in fact, we're looking at doing our hop harvest the end of this upcoming week, sometime around the 15th, 16th perhaps. The barley's been harvested and malted, and it's all in silo. And so we'll start brewing this year's estate hopefully sometime the week of the 16th. All depends on the hop harvest.
I got to think that Ken was a uber hippie back in the day, right? Like, you know that he had a Volkswagen bus and...
when I got my job at the brewery, I drove up in my bus. And so,
yeah, now we're talking.
Ken's great. You know, that's the way both of us were. You know, he grows a lot of his own food. He's got a nice orchard on his property. And he grows a lot of his own vegetables. We just put in this last year as well. We've got a 2-acre organic vegetable garden.
What's a vegetable?
Over by the hop field now to serve the restaurant.
Now, how large a batch of this estate were you able to produce with those?
We did. Last year we packaged about 850 barrels.
Wow.
And we get the hops in, and when they're coming off the picker, we're firing up the brew house, and we brew straight through until we can get everything done.
Wow.
With the hops that we've got, basically we'll do two pickings, because the lighter aroma hops come off first, and then our Chinooks will come off last. And so basically my challenge will be to take a look at the hops as they come in, formulate the beer on the fly, not once but twice, and then take those two beers, blend them back together, and come up with something as remarkable as what you're drinking right now.
That can't be easy, figuring out what the hops are.
Well,
I prefer not to analyze them when I'm doing that. I like to do it just by rubbing them. So, it's fun.
So you're rubbing one out. Yeah,
You don't go to the lab to get the alpha acid of those hops, huh?
They run them, but we've been doing wet hop beers now. I think this will be our 13th year. We were actually the first ones in the U.S. to do it. And I kind of had a dry weight to wet weight ratio in my head from drying things out. And so, We just play with it. I kind of prefer not to know. It makes it a little bit more of a challenge. I know hops pretty well from doing stuff over the years, and it's a great rush. You put the beer together, and then about 6-7 days later, as soon as it's chilled in the fermenter and you get the yeast out of it, you're drinking it and hopefully having the proper oh my god moment.
Right, as opposed to the opposite.
Yeah.
As opposed to the opposite. So,
do you find that
it's great fun?
Do you find that your hops vary a whole lot from you know, year to year, alpha acid wise, or can you just pretty much take like Cascade at like 5.5 and be good?
Yeah,
at that?
You can judge it that way. You know, they don't change a lot, and we know, and I know from just looking at the hops here, you know, particularly doing them organically, there's no inputs, and so they don't get quite the oil and alpha. Mm. Amounts that you would get in commercially grown hops, and so we take that into consideration. But you know, the freshness is what it's all about.
Right.
This year's barley came off really nice. I had lunch with the gentleman that malted it last week on Friday. He loves working with us on this project because he knows he's going to get a few cases of beer delivered to his office in a month or so.
So
he's he's a very creative guy. So.
You do still have to send all the grain out to a maltster then?
Yeah, we do. You know, we don't have a malting facility here that would handle this. One of the things we're kind of playing with this next year or two is actually putting in maybe a small floor maltings, perhaps.
Wow.
Or put in a little bit of a drum malting facility so that we can do our own crystal malt, say, for some of these real fresh malt aromas that we want to get in these specialty beers.
Nice.
Back to the...
Which is another thing that most people just aren't going to do, you know.
No, of course not.
It's not, not a, one of those ROI things again. It's just all for fun.
Right.
No. Well, that's because that's craziness.
Yes, it is.
That's thinking way too far outside of everything.
Yeah.
It is, you know, and you know, when you're thinking, oh, my God, the flavors you can bring to people and
right.
the fun you can have while you're doing it. Why not?
Yeah, once you put the beer first, then it's a logical thing.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so that's one of the great things about being here at Sierra Nevada.
Hey, you were talking about your wet hops and your ratio from wet to dry. What's the ratio that you guys use?
You know, I started out with about a 5-to-1, 6-to-1. You know, as I've played around a little bit, I'll go anywhere now as up to 7 or 8-to-1. You know,
wow.
People are really driving that. The aroma, most of that goes in at the end. You know, the beer that you're drinking when it was released probably was around 60 BUs, and it's a very nice, well-balanced beer. But with the wet hop beers, I really want the aroma. You know, it's not about having a real bitter experience with that. And so you really start jacking them in at the end. In a 100-barrel brew, towards the end of the boil, I'll put in 400 to 500 pounds of hops in a pop.
Damn, Jipper, that was an awesome question. I gotta admit, that was a good question.
Well, and it's interesting because I was gonna note about wet hop beers. This one, it's not grassy like a lot.
No.
Of wet. Is
yeah.
that a variety thing, or is that about the ratio?
No, it's a ratio thing. And I think if you take the wet hops and really try to drive up the kettle additions and get the bitterness up, you're going to start getting that grassy vegetative note. And so it's all about proper usage in the brewing and not overdoing it. You know,
okay.
That's where the real fine line is. I mean, when you're putting, you know, I think the most I've ever put in a 100-barrel kettle is 900 pounds of hops. And that was, you know, to use up everything I had and then blend into the bulk of the run on the product. But if you drink something like that on its own, you know, that's where you're going to get that kind of grassy chlorophyll-y flavor. And you can also get some bitterness from that that's not a good, clean, hop bitter.
Yeah.
It's just more of a vegetative, resiny type thing.
Yeah.
So it's all in a little bit of dance for balance there.
Oh, for me, yeah, the wet hop beers, I'm sure tasty's the same way. It's like, that's nice.
Well,
it just
got to dry 100 to get one.
Yeah, just they all taste grassy.
Yeah.
And it's like nice effort, and
yeah.
I'm not going to have two.
Now
yeah.
I gotta say I used to be that guy too. I was with you, but now that I've had a few examples, they just seem to be getting better. I had
yeah.
Brian Hunt's over at Moonlight was really good.
Oh
I
yeah,
like
Brian
that.
Did a great one. It's here again. It's a learning curve for people. We kind of started doing it. You know, we were the first to do it. That's all a great story in itself, how that came to be. But, you know, we've been a little bit ahead of the curve on it. And so we've had some good experience. And some of the year, I think the first year I did it, we did maybe 80 barrels.
Okay.
And so served it in the pub only. And, you know, but I think, you know, like with anything, you know, it's trial and error. And you only get one shot a year. So, you know, it's a long learning curve. Let's put it that way.
Right, right. Kind of like it's like a wine learning curve, really. You get that.
Yeah, you know,
one
you get
shot.
A harvest and you make the beer and then you're drinking it and going, well, shoot, you know, next year or how you want to play around and change things or maybe play with the ratio of if you're fortunate enough to use different hop varieties in the beer, which is really difficult. Then you can play around with those ratios and play with the flavor and aroma profile.
Does Sierra Nevada use hop extracts at all? Have you tried that?
No, we're 100% whole cone hops. We don't use any pellets even. We don't use any pellets, any extracts, any downstream products whatsoever. Whole cone the whole time. So it's our philosophical history, and we do feel that the quality of the aroma that we're looking for is best derived from whole cone hops.
Okay, all right.
And that gives us some really serious challenges. I mean, storage is an issue. You know, stability. We spend. You know, we have a lot of our. I have quarter bales or half bales, Mylar wrapped and nitrogen purged, so that I can maintain my aroma. Going into the year, you know, pellets can be stabilized, so the volatile oils are a little bit more inert. But when you go through the pelletizing process, and that's gotten much better over the years, for sure, with liquid nitrogen and whatnot, and cooling down the equipment. But you know, anytime you get the hops up to an elevated temperature, once they've been kilned, you do have a tendency to break down and oxidize those volatile oils. And so, you know, for our dry hopping and everything and our kettle additions, it's all whole hops.
Okay.
Steve, on a wet hop beer, do you do a 60-minute addition or do you delay that?
I do, in say, a 75-minute boil. I'll do a 30, about a 60, and then a huge one right at the end. You know, I'll put in an addition and boil it in. And then I'll put in another addition right when I shut the kettle off and just stir it in. And so it's almost right post-boil, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And one of the big challenges with the amount of hops is just getting them into, you know, down into the liquid. Because
right.
They, you know, they don't want to do that. And so we kind of beat them in with a stick. So, you know, that's it. So just by letting them soak, we do a very, very slow kettle strike. In the older brew house, originally, it was a two-vessel brewing system, so it was a mash kettle. So we're fortunate that it has a mash paddle in the bottom. And so as we're doing that kettle strike, we stir constantly. And as we get down in, it kind of thrashes the hops into it a little bit. We go just really very, very slow so that the wort has an opportunity to just permeate into that wet cone. Mm. And that's one of the biggest challenges with wet hop beers is getting the wort into the oil and vice versa, you know, so that right. You get a transfer. And it just takes some patience and a little bit of manual agitation for folks out there that are going to maybe try this on a home system.
Keep your spoon handy, huh? Yeah.
We try to manually agitate JP
they
once a show.
Beat them up.
It works.
Yeah.
What about absorption rates? Like, what do you see for that?
Oh, you lose some liquid, but you know what the hell, you know?
The beer comes
good
first.
Answer.
Yeah, you know, it's when you're doing a beer like those, you know, you want to, you know, obviously you want to get the yield, but it's inefficient. I mean, it just goes with the territory. That's part of the assumption when I set up the brewing program for one, and you just have an assumed amount of loss.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Have you ever thrown hops in a blender or a food processor and tried that, or you know what would the effects would be? Or
you know, we played around at one point. We had something that you would maybe grind herbs in, you know, for a vegetative herb thing. And we looked at, you know, doing something like that, and it just wasn't, you know, it was a pain in the ass.
Yeah, how long does it take to grind up 900 pounds of hops?
Yeah, we didn't go that far. I think after about 10, we figured, you know, no going with this. So.
Well, they have that really strong blender that they put iPhones and shit in. You've seen that, right?
Yeah.
Will it blend?
The blend tech.
Yeah.
No, we're good.
There you go. Yeah. Too much work.
Right.
They are nice blenders, though.
Yeah, they do look good.
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about sustainability in you guys.
Sure.
Because, and the reason I'm really harping on this is because it's so impressive the amount of things that you have done at your brewery.
Mm-hmm.
I've kind of broken it down into four categories. You could probably correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like we're talking about energy, water, mm-hmm. recycling, and recovery.
That's a good place to start, yeah.
Okay. So let's start with energy, because it sounds mm-hmm. like you've been doing that for a long time to really try to produce your own energy there at the brewery.
Yeah, you know, Ken really started, you know, here again, this goes back to an individual's personal philosophy and bring it in into a business setting. And, you know, the brewery's, it's a big facility, and it has a big impact on a community and on resources. And we wanted to make that as positive as possible. You know, Ken is a small footprint kind of guy. So am I. You know, I've been recycling, you know, for 30 years and, you know, and doing the things that, you know, they're right. That's the right thing to do.
Right.
And so 6-7 years ago, we really started getting into the energy aspect of it. And we now have combined with the fuel cells that we have, I mean, that's a 1.2 megawatt facility that's here on site.
Okay.
Those were installed in 2005. Those combined with the solar panels that we've done, everything here that you can possibly put a solar panel on has one on it. Covered parking, warehousing, everything. And we've got just under 11,000 panels here at the brewery. It's one of the largest privately owned solar panel counts in the country. And we're doing a warehouse expansion this year, and so that'll bring us up almost to 10,700.
Let me ask you this about the solar, and you might not have specifics, and that's okay, but as far as I understand, solar panels are one of the most expensive ways to generate energy. Do you guys have a prediction of how long it's going to take you to actually get your investment back on those?
Yeah, you know, when we did that, you know, there's some we got some tax benefit, obviously, and through the state government, you get some rebate type things. And so we were looking at a 5 to 7 year return on investment.
Oh, that's not bad. I thought it would be much worse.
25 years or something.
That's what I
thought. The panels will last that long. But, you know, there again, I mean, it's, you know, Ken felt it was the right thing to do.
Yeah, sure.
You know, yeah, he's an astute businessman. But, you know, if the return on investment was 7 to 10, he would have done it anyway.
Okay.
You know, if it were, you know, so we're here for the long haul.
Yeah.
You know, between the two, the fuel cells and the solar panels, during their peak power outputs, we produce more power than we can actually use.
Wow.
And so as that averages out over the course of the year, we produce just under, last year we averaged 85% of our own electrical needs, all on-site in-house generation. And that's truly
amazing.
Phenomenal.
It is.
Here again, when you think, you know, this is, what, about the seventh largest brewery in the United States. That's an incredible thing to do. You know, we've got solar panels on our rail spur. We've got, you know, solar panels on our child care facility. I mean, you know, as we expand, we just continue to do that. You know, going back to the cost of the panels, you know, over the course of the year, the more installs that we did, unfortunately, with the way the state pays out their rebates, you know, the more you do, the less they want to pay you for it.
I see.
And so as we did one installation to the next, the ROI on those installations got longer.
Okay.
But there again, I mean, we're in for the long haul. It's the right thing to do, and so we just continue to do it. So,
well, at what point will you be able to generate the 1.21 gigawatts it would take to actually go back in time?
Right. That's the real question here.
Yeah,
we need one of those capacitor things, you know.
Well, I have a design for it. It's kind of revolutionary. I don't want to give it too much away, but...
And what year would you go back to?
Yeah. Get your poodle skirt.
I don't know. But maybe I'd go into the future. I would never want to go into the future.
Well,
Steve,
you're going back to 69. Don't bullshit us.
Well, if you go into the future, don't bring your girlfriend. She'll pass out.
Right.
So, you know, we've done that. But, you know, with the energy part, I mean, that's one of the the bigger things, obviously, with the solar and the fuel cells. But we've taken that into our transportation systems. You know, we bought the first Peterbilt hybrid tractor outside of testing. We bought one of those last year, and we use that on our local route. You know, we've got heat and energy recovery wherever we can here at the brewery. You know, we do things, you know, like take the heat off of our boiler stacks and use that back into the system to preheat the water before it actually goes into the boilers.
Okay.
And so, you know, there's energy recovery throughout the brewery. You know, we put skylights in as much as we can so we can have natural lighting. We use all efficient light bulb systems and, you know, motion sensors, everything possible. We've even been taking the methane off our wastewater plant, and we bring that back in, and we've reworked our boilers so that we get, instead of buying natural gas for our boilers, we fire the bulk of our boiler. Now we're getting better and better with that.
Let's talk about that a little, because
gas off our
methane in here.
Well, yeah, we want to figure out how to recover this stuff too. My dog alone could probably power your brewery.
I don't want to recover it. I want to get rid of it. Get it as far away from me as possible.
Well, and just so that folks understand what Steve means, so you have your own water reclamation plant at the brewery.
Yeah, that was one of the things that we did as well. You know, you know, we use the city municipal system for years, and as we grew, and you know, we obviously want to have a great partnership, partnering relationship with the city. And in order to take our load off of them, we put in our own wastewater plant. It's a combination aerobic and anaerobic system, and you know, with everything in that regard, it produces a methane.
Okay.
And so you know, you can just burn that off with a flare, or you can bring it back in and burn it as a fuel source. Yes. And so we've been working very diligently, particularly over the last year, 18 months, to get that the usage of our methane output as great as possible. And as we've done that, and of course as the brewery's grown, we're looking at actually expanding the anaerobic portion of our wastewater plant for two reasons. One, simply because of need with additional growth within the brewery, but also, secondly, you know, we played around with just getting it larger and feeding it. You know, we have a lot of spent yeast and a lot of spent grain and whatnot that comes out, and particularly with the yeast, if we're looking at just basically, instead of sending all that off for cattle feed, using it here at the brewery as an energy source.
Okay.
And so, you know, if we could somehow get in balance where we could produce, you know, enough gas to fire our boilers, that would be the ideal. Whether or not we can get into that level of balance, I don't know. We've got other people smarter at that than I working on that within the company. But that would be an incredible goal.
That would be impressive.
Yeah.
It would seem to me that your facility is kind of a research facility for this sort of things. Do you have universities in there studying what you're doing?
We do. You know, we've worked, we have folks from Davis. Their sustainability group has been in, of course, Chico State. And then Ken was working and funding with a group, I believe, up in Reno. And they were looking at doing recyclable plastics out of starch. And so they were looking at actually using our effluent, our brew house effluent, which would be, I think, a lot in regards to yeast, and using that to make plastics. You know, we like beer cups, for instance, or spoons. There are some patents on that in regards to corn starches.
Okay.
And they were trying to get around those a little bit because those are pretty much locked up, but they were going to try and do something more in regards to barley.
I see.
And so, yeah, we have people coming in and looking at our facility all the time. You know, both from an academic point of view, but then also other breweries, you know, that are doing either an expansion, a new facility, whatever it may be. And we like to be very, very helpful in that regard because it's good for everybody.
Yeah.
You know, and if you do this when right on your green site, right when you start up your facility, it's a hell of a lot easier than going back and doing it on a retrofit. And,
yeah, that makes
you know,
sense.
European industry and, you know, German brewing, they've been doing things with water and whatnot for years. And so, you know, just because the cost of energy is so much more expensive.
Yeah.
We're saving a good amount of money, but for us, it's truly the right thing to do.
Okay. Now let's talk about water, because an interesting number that I read is that you were able to cut your water use by half. Is that right?
Yeah, we went over that just this last week, and we are down now. What was stated in our meeting, we did a presentation, National Salesforce meeting last week, and we're down to a 3-to-1 water to beer usage. And we were running 6-to-7-to-1. And so,
and what's the do you know the national average for breweries?
I'm thinking, an industry standard, and it depends on your operation. I'm thinking more like in a 5-to-6.
Okay.
Or maybe a 5-to-1 ratio. And it depends on your operation. There are some certain pieces of equipment in larger breweries that are just incredibly water intensive, pasteurizers and whatnot, for instance.
I see.
And we don't pasteurize, but it's basically just been by doing as much water recovery as we possibly can, and reworking, heat exchangers so that we can move water from one place to another. And it's just diligence on everybody's part.
Wow.
To make sure that, we've redone our programs for tank cleaning and water and rinsing of vessels. We went to a dry lube system on our bottle shop conveyors over the course of the last year. Ouch. That saved a phenomenal amount of water.
Okay.
And now what we're in the process of doing is getting permitting so that we can use our wastewater. It's a clear water effluent. We basically go into the system just on a flow rate, but we're getting permitting and we've had the testing done so that we can use that water, recover that, and use that for irrigation here at the brewery, both in our organic garden and with our hop field.
Now,
so we'll be using that water rather than just pulling from the aquifer.
Do these water saving methods end up costing you money? Do we pay for this in a bottle of beer, or does it save you money because you're saving
water? It saves us money in the long run. There's a return on investment there.
Okay.
And it's the same, when Ken wants to put in whatever it costs for a new solar array, we don't go through a price hike. That's
okay.
All part of doing business, and that's factored in to the cost of doing business. And so, it's a savings. It's a long-term savings from
right.
us from a business point of view, but also from an environmental point of view.
Well, and as a consumer, it's still one of the cheapest craft six-packs on the shelf, right?
Well, it's higher than any other beer on the shelf.
Yeah, yeah.
I assume your economies of scale are, that's where you're getting your money to do your, the really nice things that you're doing.
Yeah.
And we've been resistant. There's been a lot of pricing fluctuation in our raw materials over the last 3 years. Everything's gone up. Hops went through the roof a couple years ago. Barley prices is fluctuating depending on everything that's going on. And then you have issues with high energy and glass and cardboard. And, all breweries over the course of the last couple years have taken in some price hiking to accommodate that, but you got to be sensitive to your consumer. At the end of the day, they're the ones that are paying your bills, and you don't want to price yourself to the point where you're pricing yourself out of the market.
Exactly.
There's a fairness factor there, and here at Sierra Nevada, when we want to make facility or production improvements that we deem, there again that ROI. That's our part of the business. You're not going to feel the hit for those types of things. If there's a price increase, you're looking at it because of fluctuation, increased costs of just what it takes to make that package of beer and get it out there to you.
Right.
I'm kind of intrigued about your water treatment from the start to the finish. Obviously, when I'm brewing beer, I'm using a lot of water. I use an RO system, so that's not getting me a lot of. I'm pumping more water out than I'm getting on that
right,
one.
Right.
Wasteful heathen.
Exactly.
Yeah,
but I can. So, but with you guys, with how much water you use, and you're taking the heat out of the water that you're using and reusing that. But when you're talking about your water facility, what are you doing with that? Is it and how far are you taking that?
You mean with the chemistry of the water?
Well, no, they're treating their water so they can dump it somewhere safely, obviously.
Yeah, you know, if you know, I'm not, it's not a chemistry that I'm real good with, but you know, you go through an aerobic digester and settling ponds, you know, and then it's basically there's microbials in there that just break things down. And of course, we're talking about just the brewery effluent. There's two waste streams out. You know, you've got your domestic waste from, you know, the restaurant and whatnot.
Right.
And this is just all, you know, processed water.
So are you...
And the loading on that, it's mainly, you know, there's some solids. You know, we screen out the solids and they go to green waste, to composting. And so it's mainly water treatment, you know, some yeast goes through there. Beer, of course, obviously goes through there, you know, that goes out in either yeast or beer to the floor and whatnot, and then some of the malt particulate. And, you know, with residence time, those are just broken down, and what's left settles is a sludge, and then the clear liquid that's on top is what goes out of the facility into the wastewater stream, you know. And it's basically the same, you know, most large municipalities here in Chico, they have a large, I think it's 100% aerobic, yeah. You know, where it's settling pond.
Yeah,
and so then they skim off the top. By having the anaerobic part, it just increases the throughput.
No, I think what I was getting at is why you're doing it. Are you just trying to take the load off of the municipality, not overload them? Or is it for reclamation so you can use it for something else?
Well, you know, we did it for the first reasons you stated. I mean, we wanted, you know, we definitely were looking to take some of the load off of the city system. There is a financial incentive there as well.
Yeah.
You know, if you're going to be paying for putting that through their system, they're processing it, and obviously they're going to charge you for it. Once you put the facility in place, obviously then there is a monetary savings. You know, then you have the facility in place, and then you want to start thinking, okay, what can I do with this system to get the best benefit from it? So you've got a wastewater treatment plant that is putting out gas that can be used as a fuel source, and it's putting out water, it's putting out liquid that you can use as a non-potable water source. And so we can use that for landscape. And, you know, with our agricultural stuff that we're doing here on site, I mean, that all of a sudden, you know, that's an automatic.
Yeah. I'm thinking company showers. I don't know.
Yes.
Just kind of help everyone take the burden off their own home water source.
Group
kind
of company showers.
Yeah, I mean,
because
sure.
You know, if you're thinking, you're thinking about, you know, we irrigate here on site between the garden and the hops. You know, you're looking at 11 plus acres.
Yeah.
That takes a lot of water usage. And so, you know, why pull it out of the ground when we're actually putting water back into the ground, so to speak, from our facility. So,
but obviously you need a permit for that.
Yeah, we've done all the permitting on it, and we've changed, you know, our caustics over here within the brewery. Instead of using a sodium chloride, sodium hydroxide for our caustics, we've switched to a potassium hydroxide in our chemical base so that we're not salting back into the soil. It's a lot easier on that over a course of time, and so we're not going to have a lot of sodium. It's good. So that'll work real well. So we had to do some upstream changes within our process to enhance that, but I think it's going to be a fantastic thing.
Well, it sounds like you're doing what a lot of the cities are doing anyway. They take the effluent off the top, and then they have a settling pond. They dry out the sludge. A lot of them burn the sludge after that, too. So that might be something you want to do.
What we've been able to do with the size of our plant, you know, we've actually sold some of the sludge off to startup wastewater plants. You know, if you're doing an expansion, you need more sludge. If your wastewater plants goes into an imbalance, you know, if you overload it, for instance, you can harm the health of the bacteria. And so, you know, there's kind of a sludge trade out there, I guess you could say.
Black market sludge, yes.
Interesting.
Dude, can you give me some sludge?
We've bought and sold sludge here, and so that works out really well also.
Well, it's live sludge.
I have my medical
sludge
permit.
There you go.
I got some really healthy sludge out back.
It's very Mad Max.
Make a stout called that.
Now, okay, so the other part of your sustainability that I wanted to address, and you've mentioned part of it a couple of times, is kind of your transport and the vehicles that you use. One thing that you've mentioned, and you just went over quickly, but I was really impressed by it. You actually built a rail station that you own, that Sierra Nevada owns, so that you can receive, because your grain comes from Canada.
Yeah, all of our pale malt comes out of Canada, and you know, we'd been trucking it in, and we'd been looking at this for actually quite a few years, and it was just basically an issue of size.
Okay.
And so, you know, once we were bringing in enough that we could switch over to a rail car system, that only made sense. And we save hundreds of thousands of dollars on fuel cost, you know, for trucking. And
it's amazing.
Yeah, there again, I mean, it goes back to we do get a savings, but, you know, we're taking those trucks off the road, and it's just a better way to transport. You know, on any given week here at the brewery, I'll bring in close to 1 million pounds of malt.
On a week? Wow.
Yeah, on a weekly basis. Yeah. And so, you know, we had originally leased a rail spur about 10 miles out of town.
Okay.
And that got us up and going. And while we did that, we looked around for some properly zoned property as close to the brewery as we could, and we were actually able to purchase some acreage that I mentioned earlier that's just 2 miles from the brewery. And it was, you know, it's tough. I mean, you got to get it close to UP and you the rail company, and you have to do negotiation with them and have the spur put in. And, you know, going through the zoning and the work with them, it took us about a year, year and a half to get the spur up and running.
Okay.
And we've been running it now for the last year. And so it's been great. You know, rail is just a more cost-effective way to transport, given that you have that opportunity.
Yeah.
So we bring in the raw material that way. And then the other thing that we've been really doing aggressively over the last couple years is shipping as much as we can via rail.
Okay.
With intermodal. I mean, one of the additional costs that Ken insists on within the product shipping is that we ship everything refrigerated.
Okay.
And so, you know, so we don't ship on rail car. It's a box on a flatbed.
A reefer.
And so we basically, it's a reefer. And that adds a lot of cost, you know, particularly getting beer to the East Coast. But it's a quality thing that that we just won't go away from. And, you know, when fuel costs got so high a couple years ago, it was actually costing us about $4 per case to ship beer into the Southeast.
Wow.
At certain times during the year, particularly in the summers when you're competing with produce and whatnot going out for reefer. And, you know, that's a cost that you can't obviously turn over to the consumer. You know, that's working into your profitability. And so that got us really aggressive working with intermodal groups. And so we'll ship by rail to a master distribution center, and then we'll truck from there, and we get considerable fuel savings that way.
Now, if I'm Ken, or even Steve, because it's his beer, isn't it?
Then you're retiring.
What
are you doing here?
I am pissed when I see some of these, you know, big box beer stores and things like that putting my Sierra Nevada that I just paid $4 a case to ship cold out in a hot warehouse or out on the floor. Like, that's got to drive you nuts after going through all that.
It really does. You know, refrigerated warehousing has gotten really difficult, even from a distribution point of view. You know, Coors always in the past, they refrigerated cold or stored cold, and AB had some really high standards. And as things have changed over the years, and a lot of beer goes through a lot of distributors, and they used to, you know, the big guys used to kind of drive the bus on temperature control and whatnot.
Yeah.
And that's been very difficult. You know, we try to maintain refrigeration all through the transport and marketing of the beer, and do the best we can. You know, at certain stores, you know, the big box stores, I mean, we'll go through Costco because their throughput is so fast. But, you know, some of the big bottle format stores where they sit on the shelf, we just try to stay away from those as an outlet.
Oh, I see.
You know, some states, it's what you get. You know, some states, that's more of a government-run entity. And you know, they put the case right on the floor. There's some in the coal box, but there's a floor stack sitting next to it by the window.
The government
and you cringe. But we could only do the best we can. And then, of course, with our sales guys out there, it's up to them then to make sure that the places don't overstock and overorder and have the beer sit elongated periods of time. We want to move it through a situation like that as quick as we can.
Well, I think we appreciate it that, you know, if it's a 30-day turnaround from the time you ship it till the time someone's drinking it, if you can handle 20 days of that cold.
Yeah.
Or 25 days of that cold, that's a big plus.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've studied that a lot here in our R&D facility and temperature profiling and, temperature development with time and with temperature. The warmer the temperature, I mean, it is truly logarithmic how much quicker the beer ages with temperature. And so it's something that we do the best we can with, and it does cost us a considerable amount of money.
Oh, and I just want to point out back to the rail too, and you can get this. I encourage you guys listening at home, if you're interested in this sort of thing, the SierraNevada.com site is really informative and lists out a lot of the things we're talking about, and you can read right here that their rail car. So they take their shipments of grain from Canada, like Steve was saying. One rail car holds 3.5 to 4 truckloads of raw materials in one car.
Easily.
Only is it more fuel efficient being pulled by the single engine in the train, but he's getting 3 to 4 truckloads at a time. And
it's just
impressive.
I'll bring in upwards of 15 to 18 truckloads of malt.
Okay.
So when you start looking at that over the course of the year, the fuel savings is incredible.
Right. Well, you're doing so much there. We're getting a little short on time. I wanted to do some more beer talk with you, too. But like I said, go to SierraNevada.com, and you can search on just click on our environment, and you can really read about every detail that they're doing over there to save water, to create their own energy. It sounds like you're really close to your goal of being 100% reliable on your own, reliant on your own energy.
That is the ultimate goal. You know, we can get a little bit more electrical and gas savings here. You know, the water is always going to be what it is. But, you know, and then from a recycling, you mentioned that. You know, last year we recycled 98% of everything that came out of the brewery. and we're shooting for 100% there. You know, I'm looking at some notes I've gotten. I think it's actually closer to 99%. One of the things that we actually have coming in, it's on the water right now, that's really cool, I'll mention quickly, is a large-size composter. And so everything that currently, you know, would go to the landfill from our restaurant, we're going to start composting on site. And this is a large drum-type composter that Ken, he bought it out of New Zealand, I believe is where they're fabricated, and it'll churn out compost like crazy. Wow. And so we'll be able to use that in our hop field, in our garden, maybe, you know, work in conjunction with other groups and distribute that. But so we're working to get more and more out of that. We've got two people on staff, two sustainability coordinators, and they've worked incredibly hard and diligently on programs here within the brewery to get as much out of the system as possible and either reuse or recycle. So it's awesome.
Well, if I may be so bold, Steve, if I could just give you a tip once you get the kind of energy thing, and I can't go too far into it, but 88 miles an hour.
Is that the way?
That's all I'm going to say. Mm-hmm. You take that however you want. Go with it.
Get you there.
I'll go with that one.
All right, so go to the site and check it out. It's just, to me, it's impressive to see a historically wasteful industry do so well at trying to recover. So I thank you guys for it. I appreciate it.
Hey, thank you so much. I appreciate it as well. I mean, you know, the solar thing is incredible. We did, SunPower was one of the first people that came in and did the solar install. And Ken did a thing for employees in conjunction with them, where not only with the state rebate and the tax credit, but he did a private so much per kilowatt with your install, you know, between the two of them, cash out of pocket as an additional rebate.
Wow.
And, you know, it's something that I had looked at doing for years, and so this last year in March, I've got solar on my house.
Nice.
And so, you know, my payback is in that classic, you know, 7-year estimate. It's something that, you know, I wanted to do. It's the right thing to do, but, you know, can kind of put there again, you put your money out there, for your, the people that work for you. And I took advantage of it right away, and it's been absolutely awesome. There's nothing like going out to the side of the house and watching your meter spin backwards.
That is awesome.
Yeah, living there.
You know, I would do that, too.
That's taking it to the man. Yeah.
Where I live, I've been trying for years to try to reclaim the cancer that the refinery is putting in the air and make energy out of it, but it's not...
You burn the tumors.
It's not working. Yeah, is that how...
Hey, you know, one other just real blurb on sustainability, sure. You know, that's a little bit different from what you see on the website. And it's one that kind of I'm proud of here at the brewery, and that's the human sustainability aspect of the brewery. And a couple of the things that Ken's done over the last few years, I mean, we have just off to the side of the property across the street, we have a health clinic that is staffed for structured hours during the week by nurse practitioners.
Wow.
And it's open free of charge to not only full-time employees but part-time employees from the restaurants and their families. And so you can go over there, you know, if you're a part-time waits person and you've got a kid with a cold, you can go over there and get checked out free of charge.
Wow.
They can write a prescription for
That's
you.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Things of that nature. We've just a year now or so ago, we put in, it's a different business entity for obvious reasons. We've got on-site child care for people that for brewery personnel. You know, it's an incredible place, and those are the things that keep people truly invigorated in their jobs and want to stay here. And those are things that, you know, there again, it is a business thing, but, you know, we're talking about all these energy type things and an ROI. I mean, what is the perceived ROI on having a health clinic for your staff and family?
Right.
Low turnover.
You know, Yeah, you know, it gives people, you know, I'm incredibly proud of those programs. I mean, we've got you can sign up here in-house, you get a break from your work, and you get an in-house massage. I mean, so what the hell?
Seriously?
You know, so, yes, seriously.
Okay, Sierra Nevada/applications.com.
Beer and massage, awesome.
We should move up there and broadcast from Sierra Nevada.
Yes.
And then, you know, just that's why I was gone in July. Last year, the brewery put in a policy so that if you've got 15 years of tenure here, Ken gives you an additional 1 month off during the course of a year for you to pick. It's got to be taken 4 weeks continuously. I finally had an opportunity, you know, after,
duty.
You know, I was, and so, I had the month of July off paid, in conjunction, it didn't come out of my vacation. It was an absolute additional.
Hey,
I'm pretty sure that
people.
Ken's birth name is actually Jesus. I think it's Jesus Grossman over there. He's
a
good dude.
That was one of the great experiences of my life. I don't think I've had a month off with nothing to do since I was 14.
Yeah. That's cool.
What happened when you were 13? That's weird.
I started working.
Oh.
Hey, Steve, I've heard you guys have a cure for a hangover, too. Is this true? I hear it's kind of like an industry secret.
It's but called it's not all drinking from you guys.
It's like a liter of unhop word or something?
No, if there's one out there, I got to find it because I ain't waking up sick in the morning.
Right. Because I am a drinker.
Where did you hear that, Chet?
You know, I heard it from a couple brewers around the area. I think Lagunitas in particular. And they said, you know, some of the brewers at Sierra Nevada go around telling people that you drink like 2 liters of unhop wort, you know, 10 Plato or above. Not too high.
2 liters of water.
Two liters of water. Like, it's a lot.
Good Lord.
It's something like that. And that'll cure everything.
I don't drink that in a week.
Yeah. What it is the
you
water.
You know, it is. You know, when, particularly at the original brewery, I mean, you know, it was, you could get in and out of or have access to the vessel so easily. And, boy, there's nothing like a real nice, a coffee cup full of first runnings wort in the morning to really get you going.
I mean,
you got some great sugars.
Yeah.
You got some vitamins going. Yeah. You know, especially if you're making a dark beer. I mean, first runnings porter wort is just that'll just get you smoking in no time.
The original Red Bull.
Yeah.
Usually
really
after
get
a lot
off
of drinking, I'm making a dark beer anyway.
Yeah, the rumors out there about Sierra Nevada brewers, because they're just particularly tough individuals.
I see.
That's where it starts.
Cool.
We're not allowed to have hangovers. You just have to grunt it out.
Scott, did you have anything before the break? You look.
I want to know if we can, when we go, you know, set up our live broadcast over at Sierra Nevada, we can ride around on the Willy Wonka-esque roaming bar.
Oh, yeah, what's up with the... What is that thing?
It's a, you know, it's a beer bar. It's a 12-person bicycle that's a bar.
That is great.
And a friend of Ken's made it. Ken brought him a photograph from some 1960s magazine or some shit and said, build me one of these. And this guy is an incredibly talented individual. He used to, he was one of the first people in the United States to build real high-end trick mountain bike frames. He had a company called Mountain Goat mountain bikes, and he's now doing tools for glass blowers.
Okay,
real fun stuff. But he built this bicycle. You sit six to a side on a bar facing inside, and there's a bartender there, and it holds two different kegs of beer, and you pedal facing internally. But it's got he scrapped a three-speed transmission out of a BMW from the scrapyard and put in the transaxle. And so the driver faces forward.
That's
so it's got
awesome.
Three forward speeds and a reverse. It's really pretty cool.
Genius. I'm gonna write to Ken and ask if Doc and I can take it to Burning Man with us.
You know,
I want to build one.
The guy that built it is actually going to Burning Man. I know he's trying to get his absinthe stash together this last week.
Oh, we can trade.
We need his address. You need to send me his email, Steve. We need to find him on the playa.
Yeah, definitely.
I will. You know, I've got. I'll make a note of that, and I'll send you. His name is Jeff Lindsay, and I'll send you his email address.
Perfect.
He is an absolute kick. He's a good friend and a great guy.
Oh, that'll be fun, Doc. Doc just wants to pick his brain for plans now. I can see it in his eyes.
Oh, my God.
Want to build it.
Yeah.
All right.
It's a lot of fun.
Let me do this. Another quick break. I promised Steve I'd get him out of here by 7:30, and I'm going to stick to that. We're going to take a break and come back and just talk a little more beer, because we do have some more Sierra Nevada beer questions for you.
Beer.
Awesome.
Plus, I've got
I'll come up with some answers.
Okay, good. I've got a whole bunch of listener questions in front of me for you. And
cool.
I promised my listeners I'd try to eke a beer recipe out of you, too.
Sure, I got a couple in my head.
Sweet.
Actually, wouldn't that be great if we just ended it now?
Yeah.
We had Sierra Nevada on and didn't talk about beer or recipes or anything.
All. People would kick me in the nuts when they saw me. All right, it's the session with Steve Dressler from Sierra Nevada. We're going to take a quick break. Hang in there. We'll be right back.
Great, I'm drinking.
You're listening to The Brewcasters.
The Brewcasters.
On the Brewing Network.
Whether I'm making me dry stout or rebuilding me kegs, I head to the heart of dear Dublin for me homebrewing supplies.
You head all the way back to Emerald Isle just for a wee batch of grain or a bit of keg tubing?
No, you moronic waste of liver. Dublin, California. I go to HopTech.
For 30 years, HopTech in Dublin, California has been supplying homebrewers with malt extract, fresh grains, hops, spices and sugars, hop oils and extracts, and much more. HopTech is one of the first homebrew supply shops on the internet and is proud to offer award-winning beer kits, both online and in their store, where they offer a 10% discount to all AHA members. The store is open every day except Wednesday, or shop online at hoptech.com anytime. HopTech is run by passionate, award-winning brewers who live, love, and travel for beer, and bring their experience to the store for you.
If you don't want to visit Dublin, just call toll-free 800-379-4677 or go to hoptech.com.
Visit HopTech today in Dublin, California and at hoptech.com.
Organic ingredients. Fresh, clean, good for you, good for the planet. Seven Bridges has the best selection of organic ingredients, including over 27 varieties of organic hops at breworganic.com. Join their mailing list for special deals and regular updates. They've been brewing organic and serving organic brewers for 13 years. They can help you brew great organic beer. And Seven Bridges is the proud host of the 4th Annual National Organic Brewing Challenge, the only BJCP-sanctioned nationwide brewing competition just for organic beers. Take the challenge this fall for a chance to win great prizes, including stainless steel brew kettles and organic brewing ingredients. This year, the challenge will be judged in two locations, on the East Coast at Capital City Brewing in Arlington, Virginia, and on the West Coast at Gordon Biersch in San Jose, California. For complete details, visit breworganic.com/competition. Seven Bridges is cooperatively owned in awesome Santa Cruz, California. Everyone there is dedicated to great beer and people-friendly business practices. They offer environmentally friendly, fair trade, and fair wage brewing products whenever possible. Seven Bridges, breworganic.com.
Downtown Joe's, located in the historic Oberon Building in beautiful downtown Napa, California, offers an award-winning brew pub experience from 8:30 a.m. to 1 a.m. every day. For 15 years at the corner of 2nd and Main, Downtown Joe's has been voted best night spot 7 times and best brew pub for the last 4 years in a row. Brewmaster Colin Kaminsky's handcrafted ales, like his Tailwagon Amber Ale and Double Secret Probation IPA, are the perfect accent to riverside dining, live music, and a relaxing outdoor patio. Don't miss the Beer of the Month, special rotating taps, and the BN Army Member Special. Wear your BN gear, get 10% off your beer. Visit downtownjoes.com to make reservations, peruse their extensive calendar of events, or just read more about their fantastic beers. Come enjoy the fine beer, food, and music. Downtown Joe's, the award-winning brew pub, where you'll feel at home.
When you hear Blickman Engineering, think innovation, passion, quality, and customer service. Blickman Gear is designed by brewers to give you a sense of pride in your equipment. At Blickman, they know what makes brewing a pain and build gear that makes it fun. Like the intuitive beer gun, a completely different approach to filling bottles. The Therminator wort chiller, a new take on a plate chiller that's sized for flow, performance, and the high groundwater temps homebrewers face every day. The Brewmometer, a brilliant weldless thermometer design with brewing parameters right on the dial. The Auto Sparge, ultimate simplicity for preventing an overflow or running your mash tun dry. And much more, like the modular top-tier brewing stand, conical fermenters, and their Boilermaker brew pots. With more cutting-edge equipment coming soon, keep up with the latest from Blickman at BlickmanEngineering.com and stay on the cutting edge.
Williams Brewing is your online resource for prompt delivery of quality home brewing supplies. Since 1979, Williams Brewing has offered the finest equipment and freshest ingredients and the best customer service in the business. Cut hours off your brewing sessions by using one of our 11 varieties of famous Williams malt extract. Our Williams Belgian Pale Extract is mashed with pure Belgian two-row malt and a small percentage of Belgian wheat malt for an authentic Belgian character you just can't get from other extracts. Or check out our unique fermenters, 2.5-gallon kegs, paintball tank-based draft beer equipment, bottling aids, and much more. We even have our own line of precision hydrometers. Go to WilliamsBrewing.com to browse our vast selection. That's WilliamsBrewing.com. Orders placed by 3:30 p.m. Pacific time ship the same day. Brewing is easy. The Williams way.
Wait till you can pour it out of your own kegerator.
Yeah. I mean, your friends will look at you with awe.
And it's just hot.
It is?
It's so super hot.
The home of live beer radio.
TheBrewingNetwork.com.
Because like beer, radio shouldn't suck.
You're listening to
The Session.
Keeping the ass out of Brewcast.
This is The Brewing Network.
All right, welcome back to the program. Still talking with Steve Dressler from Sierra Nevada. And in front of me, I've got a couple different Sierra Nevada beers. One of them is a favorite of mine every single summer. It's the easiest drinking summer beer that I can find around. It's got good, bold flavor, even though it's a yellow beer. And that is the Sierra Nevada Summerfest, Steve.
I love that beer.
It's such a damn good beer.
Yeah, you know, we started doing lagers, some lagering when we moved over here in the early 90s. And we did a pale Bock first, and then we wanted to do, a really nice traditional style Pilsner. And so it's got some great body to it, you know, it runs up in the 30 BU range, so it's not real timid. But great blend of European hops, some nice European Pilsner malt in it, and it's a great beer here in Chico, particularly when you're in that 95 to 105 range.
Oh yeah, same here in Pacheco. Yeah, we got the same deal going on.
It's a beautiful beer.
So
you drive around rocking the honeys. What?
What this beer brings up for me is there's so many different styles of beer that Sierra makes. But mm-hmm. the Sierra Nevada house flavor, which is a good flavor, is so prevalent across all the beers, more than I think any brewery that I'm a fan of. Does your house flavor really stick out across every beer? And I'm curious about how that happens.
Yeah, especially with all the different styles.
Yeah. Because you know, Sierra Nevada from a mile away. I can just tell. And
well, yeah, I notice it more in the hoppier beers in terms of the...
Okay.
Well, what I'm getting is the enhanced mouthfeel. Just a voluminous mouthfeel that you get when you drink the beer.
So, I see.
The pale ale, the IPA, the torpedo, and so on.
Well, you know, you got, you know, obviously, you know, specific to the ales, we're using the same strain of yeast in there. And it's a yeast that... you know, we originally got from Siebel when the brewery started, and the Siebel Institute is in Chicago. They had a yeast library there. You know, during one of the breaks, I heard an advertisement for White Labs. Chris White is a good friend of mine. He's got a strain of, I said, some people call it California ale yeast.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, there's a 1056 used to be out there, I think, something like that.
Yep.
And, you know, people have cultured the yeast out of the bottle. But we use the same yeast strain, and we use the same fermentation profile with just about all of our ales. And so you're getting a lot of consistency and house character from that.
Okay.
You know, going back, we talked earlier in the program about whole hops. You know, when you that aromatic and the quality and the complexity of the aromatic, the hop aroma in it, I think that truly comes from the use of whole cone hops. And also a blend of different hops in that aromatic profile. Pale ale, of course, is just totally front-loaded with Cascades. I mean, that's what you're getting. But you get into Celebration Ale, you get into the new Torpedo IPA.
I'm about to do that.
You know, that's a phenomenal blend of hops. I kind of came up with that one off the seat of my pants. They thought I was crazy when I wanted to put Citra and Crystal and Magnum together in a dry hopping profile. It worked.
yeah, I don't think I've ever heard of Magnum as a dry hopper.
No, you know, but there again, you go back to those little simple things. I rubbed them, you know, and they're oily as all hell. You know, we have the ability to fractionate the oil profile with our gas chromatographs here at the brewery. We could tell about anything. And, you know, but you rub them and you get that aromatic and, you know, you kind of put them all together. And I thought, well, what the hell, you know, yeah, there's a lot to offer in that hop. I love Crystal. You know, you get that really nice citrus lemongrass type of note from it. You put that with the earthy Magnum kind of aromas, and then you throw in a hint of that Citra, which is just an oil bomb when it comes to a hop. A lot of passion fruit, tropical fruit type notes in there, and you get Torpedo. So that beer drinks like nothing I've ever had. I mean, it's just got... It changes as you're drinking it, you know, the aromas come out in layers, and it changes with the temperature in the glass, and that beer's a hell of a lot of fun.
Now, I got to tell you, I think I've said this before on the show, I want to remind my listeners, there is something about listening to the brewmaster talk about the beer that you're drinking, and it enhances to me the flavor, the experience, everything. It's probably one of the best parts about my job that I get to do this. And you folks at home, you should if you're not doing it already, you should rewind and drink a Torpedo listening to Steve talk about it.
I just learned some stuff that I'm going to be looking for next time I'm drinking a Torpedo.
Yeah.
I'm going to be looking for the flavor changes in the temperature and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's a lovely beer.
It is a nice beer. I had a question come through from a listener about this beer. Let me find that for you. Let's see. Kim wants to know if Steve talks about Torpedo, can you talk about the balance between wet hops and, well, she says pellets, but it would be whole hops, I guess, dry whole hops, and what you use for bittering in addition to Citra is her question.
Okay. In that beer, the bittering hop is Magnum. And then towards the end of the boil, it's a combination. There's some Magnum in the middle and then Magnum and Crystal at the end, heavy on the Crystal. When the Citra is only used in the post-fermentation, and one of the things that we developed here, you know, with dry hopping, and the reason that beer is actually called Torpedo is because we designed a post-fermentation vessel that we dubbed the Torpedo, where we actually, it's a secondary tank to the fermenter, and we pack it with hops. It's purged with CO2 so we don't oxidize the beer. And then the beer is slowly circulated from the fermenter out through this tank of hops for a number of days, and we get the hop oil extract that way, as opposed to traditional dry hopping where you just kind of steep it. The hops mm-hmm. like a tea bag. Much more efficient, much more better extraction of the oils. And, you know, so it, the crystal and the magnum and the citra are layered into this torpedo, and then the beer is slowly circulated through that hop bed, so to speak, and that's where that comes in. And so, and you know, for let's see, if you're talking a 200-barrel tank of torpedo, I'm using less than 10 pounds of citra post-fermentation for dry hopping on that. That hop here, again, it is an absolute bomb when it comes to oil. It's one of, analytically, it's one of the highest oil hops that we've ever analyzed of anything that's out there. And depending on the amounts that you use it, you can get all sorts of different aroma. You know, if you use it lightly, you can get those tropical fruit-type notes. If you use it very heavily, you can really push the bar, get that grapefruit note that you get from, say, a Chinook. And if you push it even farther than that, you're almost up there with a real powerful hop like a Simcoe. Mm-hmm. So it's got some great versatile uses for it. It's been a very exciting hop over the, one of the most exciting hops in the last couple, 3 years.
It's a pretty badass hop. I don't know that I've had a bad Citra beer yet.
No. It's a lot of fun. I mean, you know, I love Cascades. We're a huge user of Cascades. And, you know, you're going to get some great citrus and piney notes from that hop. But, you know, some of these other aroma varieties, here again, there's a little bit with heavier amounts of oil, higher percentages of oil, you can play around with them a little bit differently. So it's an exciting hop out there.
The citrus sounds like it's pretty versatile.
It is. You know, you could use it for bittering. It's a great aroma hop. It's a great dry hop, you know, if you're doing a steep, some kind of a soak in your fermenter. You can use it anywhere along in there.
I just like changing. There's a lot of parameters you can change to it, where a lot of these hops are like one-trick ponies.
They use this, you'll get that, and great.
But
I would encourage people out there, you know, if you can get some, you know, play around with it. There's, like you said, there's a lot of stuff to be had from it.
Now, another question that came through about the torpedo, one of your consumers says, will torpedo ever be in 12 packs or bigger than the six? It's my favorite beer that I can get at the grocery store. So wants to know.
Yeah, you know, we've had discussion on that internally, and I would say yes with it, if it's not in this year. Within the next, I'm sure we'll be releasing that in a 12-pack box. Nice.
So, why don't you mention that at the next staff meeting? it's a big plus.
A Brewing Network recommendation is torpedo in a 12.
I swear I saw it in a 12-pack, Steve. Sure it's not a...
Have you?
We're also going to look at doing a little bit more expansion next year with that in a draft format as well.
Oh, beautiful.
Oh, that'll be great.
Now, are there a lot of beers that we can find on draft at pubs that we will not find in a bottle? Or is that
not as much as it used to be. Okay. You know, we've really tried to pare that back. Some of the one-off batches that I would do, a little bit more of the limited runs we used to do out in the pub setting. And we're trying to pair up those, you know, more with our seasonal program or with our specialty beers. And so we're looking at doing a little bit more draft out there with the Torpedo. We've talked about doing a little bit more with the Keller Weiss. That's a nice one because it is so different from any of our other offerings. If you really want to have a taster set like no other, I think, on the planet, if you have a chance to come to the brewery, I mean, 16 tastes. It's a phenomenal set of beers.
I have heard it's the best tasting in brewery tours at Sierra Nevada.
Yeah, I think so. You know, if you can't find a flavor that you like on that flavor, Matt,
you don't like beer.
You're pitiful. I mean,
why are you in my restaurant?
Yeah.
There's just really something the matter with you.
I like your answer better. You're pitiful. That should be a T-shirt you sell in the tasting room. By the way.
Yeah, it should be. If you don't like one here, you're pitiful.
Yeah, Y-O-U-R.
Hey, Steve, you keep mentioning Magnum. Is that U.S. Magnum or German Magnum?
Both, you know, I diversified my contract there so that I could get the best quality depending on the agronomics. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I blend them. A couple years ago, the German Magnums were just out of this world. Last year's crop, they had some weather issues towards the end. They had some wet weather. And so they had a little bit more of an earthy note than I wanted. And so, you know, then I'll go more in the direction of the U.S., but I blend them back and forth.
Okay.
But it's, you know, I like to diversify my points of purchase so that I can cherry pick the best from wherever.
When you're
a whole hop user, I only get to buy hops once during the year. You know, after harvest, for people that don't know it, you know, if you don't buy whole hops, then they're all processed. And so, you know, if I come find that I come up short with something 6 months down the road, you know, I'll be doing hop selection first, second week of September. And if I don't take care of business, you know, 4 or 5 months later, there aren't any whole hops available out there or minimum qualities at all, then I'm just basically SOL.
What do you find the difference in the U.S. versus the German Magnum?
Well, I find it, it depends. Sometimes in the aroma, and, you know, sometimes the German ones, like I said 2 years ago, they were outstanding. Very, very spicy notes. Very nice. With the wet weather last year, they had a very slight little bit of mustiness to it. And so, you know, what I said is earthy, and the aroma just wasn't as bright. These are things, you know, when you've got a handful of them side by side, you know, it's an interpretive kind of thing. You know, when you're looking at the raw material, it comes through in the finished product, obviously.
Well, I guess what I'm getting at is if I had the best of both worlds and I'm choosing one over the other, what are the significant differences?
I would go with the U.S. You know, U.S. hops tend to be, you know, there's a little bit better refrigeration in the process in the States, a little bit more, a little better care and handling, per se. And here again, I'm not denigrating anybody overseas that's doing it. They do phenomenal hops over there. But I think the oil percentage in the U.S. is a little bit better at times. I get a little bit more of a citrusy floral note from the U.S. Magnum. You know, so it's an agricultural product and things change from year to year. So for me, you know, I cover ass, so to speak. So I make sure that I'm going to have whatever I need.
Dressler's wrong. Magnum is pure from Germany.
Well, you know, we're as homebrewers, we're going to have a choice of one or the other a lot of times.
Sure, you are.
There's going to be significant differences in the two. One's more spicy, one's, you know, more earthy, like you said.
Yeah.
I guess what I'm getting at, what's what?
Which one is more spicy, which one is more...
They call them the same thing, but they're two different dogs.
Yeah, you know, going back to the Tumbler, for instance, you know, that's a Golden Challenger blend of hops. And, you know, over the last couple years, I've moved more from UK hops to U.S. hops. Mm-hmm. They're growing Goldings and Challenger up in Washington State now. I just find the brightness of the aroma better, the year-to-year consistency of the hops is better, you know, so I've just moved into more of a U.S. You know, as, you know, I really started getting into Magnum from a purchase point with Torpedo, and, you know, I couldn't buy enough U.S. Magnum originally. It's kind of a specialty hop. You know, we bought Magnums years ago. I think I was buying 1 to 2,000 pounds a year just to keep the farmer putting them in the ground.
Wow.
And as you know, as we fell more in love with that hop, that's one of the reasons I wanted to feature it in Torpedo. And then, you know, you get a growth. I mean, our growth in Torpedo this year over last is 85%. So that's where you look at diversified points of purchase to make sure that you get the commodity that you need.
Right.
Given the opportunity, you know, if I had my choice in the long run here and working with my suppliers and with farmers, you know, we may go 100% U.S. But that's a couple 3 years in the future. Yeah.
I remember when Magnum hit the homebrewing world. It was hit by a storm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, because all the high alphas were gone and people were pissed.
Yeah.
Homebrewers were pissed.
And this was a nice high alpha. It wasn't a harsh one.
It's neutral. Yeah.
It's great, but everyone's like, when are you going to get rid of Magnum in your kits? And it's such a horrible... have you even tried it?
Yeah.
Really?
It's clean.
Because that was really the only high alpha hop within, I don't know, 5%.
Yeah,
out there for homebrewers.
Yeah, you know, and if for people that are homebrewing, you know, we've done this in the pilot plant. We've actually done beers where we just use 100% of a different hop in the aroma, and you know, Magnum makes a surprisingly nice aroma hop. You know, so if you've got some and you want to dick around at home, I would do it as an aroma hop, or at least part of the aroma hop, and see what you get. It's got a very nice aroma, great flavor, you know. And for a bittering, like you said, it's got one of the cleanest bitter qualities. It's phenomenally low in cohumulone.
Yes, it is.
And so you don't get a real harsh bitter that you get in some of the other hops.
No, I'd love to see that. It's mainstream.
Yeah,
almost now.
Tasty's our hop guy. I can see his wheels turning about this aroma hop now.
Yeah, I've never used it. I've never seen it used in a recipe. So I'll give that a try.
No, play with it. You know, nothing ventured, nothing lost or gained.
Right. That's my philosophy, by the way.
Steve
just took
Don't venture.
Okay, last question, because I promised I'd let you go, and then a recipe.
Sure.
But, you know, Tasty was doing some research before the show, and a listener also asked about it. Is it true that you guys are about to work on a beer with some Trappist monks up above Chico there?
Yeah, you know, I was going to try and send you that promo, and I didn't get in here early enough. Yeah, you know, we had this great... thing happened over the course of this last year, and just north of town here in Chico, there is a Trappist Abbey, up in the little town of Vina, and these gentlemen are monks, and so they take oaths and everything. And I haven't been up there. So when I was gone on my sabbatical, some of the folks from the brewery went up, but you know, they were interested doing. It's a very long story, but they're in the process of putting together a chapter house. The stones were first put together in the 1100s. And so they were looking at a way to try and get some money to help with this, getting this facility back together.
Okay.
And so they kind of first approached Ken and the brewery about, you know, maybe a charitable donation. And during the course of the conversation, things went the direction they were, and we're actually going to do a three-beer series in collaboration with them. We're going to do a series of Abbey Ales next year.
Awesome.
We're going to start off the first one with a double and then do a Saison in the summer months, and then finish up the end of the year with a really nice quad, perhaps doing some wood aging part of that, or, you know, whatever. So that'll be one of my creative challenges for next year.
That sounds like a lot of fun.
That's going to dictate a trip to Belgium here within the next couple of months.
Yeah, you know.
How the hell I can pull that one off. So.
Well,
just
listen.
Walk around in the house in that brown robe with the hood all the time.
Get your special haircut.
That's all research, you know.
Yeah. But this is going to be, from what I haven't had the privilege of meeting these gentlemen yet. I understand they're wonderful gentlemen. I think it's going to be an incredible thrill. It's going to be a treat and a privilege to work with these guys.
Beautiful. Well, I'm looking forward to that. Okay.
Yeah, I am too.
So, how about a recipe for my listeners?
How about a recipe? You know, I had some stuff in front of me, and, you know, given the time of year and given. I know a lot of people, I've gotten questions about this particular beer for quite a bit, but Celebration Ale. You know, we're going to start brewing it in about a month, and I don't know if that's one that fits your mold.
This is awesome. In fact, if I remember right, JP, this is one of your favorite seasonals, isn't it?
It's my favorite.
If it's all you got, go ahead.
It's my favorite.
This is cool.
Yeah, and it's, you know... it's a wonderfully complex beer, but it is a particularly easy recipe, I think, for people that, you know, for good homebrewers that have some flexibility. I think this is one that they can really pull off.
Cool.
I mean, the grist, there's only two different malts in the grist. You got two-row pale and you got C60 caramel, okay? And the caramel component is about 11% of your total grist.
All right.
Well, how do you get all that red color out of that?
I don't know.
It's really good crystal 60.
I think you stumped the brewer.
It's really good C60. You know, I like to use English crystal in that if I can. You know, but you know, if you go 11 to 12%, you should be able to get some real nice color in it.
Okay.
Okay. So that's really pretty easy. And then the hops are also very simple. They're relatively, I think, available for home brewers. It's Chinook, Centennial, and Cascade.
Three C's.
Pretty easy. Chinook for bittering, Centennial and Cascade for kind of a mid-range bitter, and then Centennial and Cascade in combination for a final aroma.
Okay. And can you give us, like, your target IBUs for those three?
Yeah, target IBUs for that beer, about 68.
Okay. And how many of those come from the bittering?
Not a lot. I mean, we use so damn many hops at the end that you can't help but get some alpha out of them.
Okay.
I'm going to do this. You guys can write down these ratios, and then, you know, because this is going to be in pounds per barrel.
Okay.
And then you guys can do the math.
Sure, no problem.
So this is a 100-barrel batch. Okay, so for bittering on Chinook, you're looking at 25 pounds.
Okay.
Okay, and when you get into that mid-range edition, you're looking at about 20 pounds of Centennial and 40 of Cascade.
All right.
And since we're very simplistic people here, again, you just repeat that for your last edition.
And is that like a flame-out edition? Or?
Yeah, that's your flame-out edition. Okay. So, you know, one, you got your bittering edition that you boil in well, and you got one just towards the end of boil. Boil it in for maybe that 10 to 15 minutes.
Okay.
And the last one is, like you pointed, that's very appropriate as a flame-out edition.
Okay.
Okay. And then you got some dry hopping going on. So the dry hops here, again, pretty simple. It's a blend of a Cascade and Centennial. And the ratio, again, there is 2 to 1.
Okay.
And it's about half a pound per barrel.
Okay.
Sure.
Yeah, so, you know, you can take those amounts, scale them down, you know, and you're going to be playing in ounces per gallon.
Yeah.
And should be able to come up with something really pretty yummy.
And then, of course, this is the Cal Ale yeast strain that we would use.
Yes, and definitely, if you have the opportunity, definitely get that yeast.
Okay.
And your fermentation profile is going to be between 62 and 68.
What is the, that's a big range.
That's
What's
big
your
round.
Ideal number?
I'm sorry. You start at 62 and ferment up to 68.
Oh, I understand. Okay, got it.
Yeah. So you want to pitch in at 62 or so, let it ferment up, and then plateau at 68. You know, you're looking at an OG, I'm thinking a pumping OG of maybe around 16.5.
Okay.
16 to 16.5. And then, you know, depending on how you're mashing and you want to dry it out, I don't want that beer too dry because it's got a pretty good BU load. If you can finish it up, 3.8.
Okay.
You know, you'll be fine if you finish up anywhere from 3.5 to 4.
All right.
Nice.
Now, Tasty, you're all giggles over there. Had you gotten this clone right already?
Yeah. What I'm doing is pretty really close, especially on the gravities and the hops, for sure.
It's a lovely beer.
Yeah,
and
it's great.
But it's not one that's got a lot of ingredients that people aren't going to be able to get. You know, these are good off the shelf homebrew. Yeah. You know, and shoot, with web based homebrew shops and stuff now, you know, compared to when I was using getting whatever I could in packets of dried yeast, things are a hell of a lot better. Yeah, but this is stuff that most people anywhere can come across.
Oh yeah, this is all common. Yeah. We got the same palate you got now.
And what's the mash temp you were shooting for?
The mash temp, let's see, we do basically a single temperature infusion. Shoot for something in the 156 range.
Well, that's how you get all that mouthfeel in that beer, right?
That's how you get that mouthfeel at the end.
The GU to BU ratio. He said you don't want to finish out too low because of all the IBUs.
No, you know, that's for me. For me, the key is, you know, I like to play, obviously, with a lot of hops. And, you know, a beer should not be a painful experience at any time. And, you know, having a thin-bodied beer with 150,000 BUs is not a good drinking experience. And so I like to keep everything nice and in balance. And so you can play with those hops. I mean, you know, Celebration Ale is an incredibly nice drinking beer. And you're looking at something, you know, with 65, 70 BUs and 6.5% alcohol, and they go down. It's lovely.
It's tremendous.
You know, because of the balance and those flavors. So, it's a favorite of mine, obviously. And you know, we're going to start. I'll be selecting hops for that probably around the 9th, 10th of September, and we will brew immediately after. So that's kind of a good one, I thought.
Now, well, Steve, how would this recipe compare to what you were doing in, say, 1999? Celebration.
Really, really pretty close. It's very similar, I mean, huh? The raw materials were the same. You know, early on when I started, Centennial didn't exist, mm-hmm. and so the beer was mainly Cascade. We were using something I can't even recall from a bittering hop, but it was very, very Cascade focused. And then as Centennial came onto the scene, and then Chinook. You know, we started incorporating that into the beer to give it some layers of aroma and flavor that you're not going to get from a single variety edition. Centennial came on the scenes, God, I'm thinking late 80s, and it was actually a hop called CFJ-90. and that was one year I think I really pissed a lot of people off. I bought almost all of them. And then it came out of the breeding program and was named Centennial. And there was a hop I remember using back then at the same time that was the CFJ-45, and it doesn't exist anymore. And it was nobody picked up on it. We wanted it really badly, but we didn't have we weren't of a size enough to support the hop, so to speak, from a marketing point of view. And I recall rubbing that hop next to Centennial, and I liked it even more. Mm-hmm. So God only knows what happened to those genetics, but I don't believe they exist anymore.
Well, you know what, Steve? You're a badass, and I appreciate you hanging out with us and talking about
all
this.
Thank you. It was a real pleasure. Like I said, I would really like the opportunity to do this again with you folks, and
you
we could
it.
Do something. Have some specifics to beer. I truly appreciate you wanting to bring our sustainability efforts to the forefront. I'm personally proud of what we've done here. The brewery is one of the greenest companies on the planet that I'm aware of, and thank you so much for bringing that out for people's attention. I appreciate it.
Well, you're welcome. It's real important to me and JP, right, JP?
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, I agree. It's you guys have done a lot from your power reclamation to the mountains turning blue on your bottles. You
Wait,
guys
no,
are really
wrong company.
No, yeah.
Oh,
that's nuclear powered. Yeah.
Oh, wrong right. mountain range.
Right. What
wrong,
about that window? Yeah.
Wrong mountain range. All right.
And I Sorry. Do want to point out that JP did not get in a single Al Gore joke in the whole.
I know, right?
Oh,
in the whole interview.
And all that means is we'll have to do this again then.
Well, yeah. Here's my plan, Steve. We're going to come up in my pop top to the brewery and hang out with you there. And
there
then we'll book a show so that you can come down and hang out with us. That's my plan.
There you go. You know, and what I will throw out there, too, you know, we are in the process of scheduling our beer camps for 2011.
Okay.
And I believe there's 26 or 28 camps this year.
Wow.
And I'm going to talk to, I might have a little bit of pull with some of the organizers of that
okay.
thing. And I'm going to see if I can't get a couple of spots in one of the camps for you folks.
Oh, that would be
and,
cool.
And we'll see if we can't get you up here and show you around the brewery a little bit and have you make your own beer.
That'd be pretty badass. Like we said, we did have two of our guys here, Tasty and Doc, both had golden passes. But
I'll bring my golden ticket.
They didn't get the golden pass. Doc couldn't get the golden pass from his wife, was the
Well, it sounds like they already had a chance. Now it's our turn.
Yeah, well, you know, if they had the chance, I suggest that you just you take it.
See?
Hey, I'm the boss. I can do
Yeah, I haven't used the F word yet on the show, but I might now. Just tell him to off, you know.
That's a boy. We like that.
It's Justin's only chance.
That's right. Yeah. All right, brother. This was a pleasure, and I appreciate it. We will have you back on the show.
Hey, thank you so much. It was a pleasure for me as well, and it was a very nice offer. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Anytime, and just another plug for Sierra 2. Heads up, if you're going to the Great American Beer Festival on Thursday night, they will be celebrating their 30th anniversary. We're doing a whole panel there in the Brewers Pavilion. I do believe Steve and Ken will be there. And
Ken will be serving all of the Sierra anniversary beers, I'm hoping, and then I do have someone lined up for your Friday cast. We'll get someone lined up to talk about sustainability for you.
Perfect. Oh, I'll be moderating the 30th anniversary, so I'm excited to be a part of it.
Nice.
You're going to have a blast with that. Those beers, the last one that came out, the black barley wine, with conjunction with New Albion. With Jack McAuliffe, it's a bomb.
Beautiful. All right, so come see us on Thursday night at the GABF. Go to SierraNevada.com, and Steve, we'll see you in a couple weeks, man.
Sweet.
Hey, great. Thank you so much.
All right,
thanks,
brother.
Steve.
Cheers.
Bye.
There you go. Steve Dressler from Sierra Nevada deserves a round of applause.
And the recipe for Celebration Ale. Yeah.
How about that?
You know, I'm glad that just came so freely and easily.
Yeah, nice. Yeah. That was a
That's
piece
the way
of cake.
It should. No arm twisting.
All right. With that Celebration Ale recipe, you know, he gave it to us in his 100-barrel batch. And this is kind of how we do things to make it easy on the brewers. But what you can do at home is download Beersmith. You can go to beersmith.com, which is the program I use when I'm homebrewing now. Not that that's a fantastic plug for the poor bastards at Beersmith, that I'm the one who uses it all the time.
Yeah, you blow the dust off them.
But I am the techie in the room, and I'm telling you that this program is just fantastic. You can get a free download. It's a two-week trial over at beersmith.com. You can punch in this celebration recipe that Steve just gave us, and you'll be able to actually scale it down. And like he said, you know, these scales, they're not linear.
Is it easy for you?
Oh, it's easy for me, which means it's like
very user-friendly.
Which means Doc just has to stare at it and it does things. That's how good this program
computer
is.
Computer on.
Yeah. Yeah. But you can really design world-class beers at home. You can make your brewing day easier by designing a recipe in just a few minutes. You can scale this recipe we just got down. You can also pick from nearly 100 styles and recipes included in the style guide. There's features for every brewer from beginner to advanced. Just go to beersmith.com, download your... Oh, actually, it's a 21-day trial version, plus video tutorials over at beersmith.com. You know that other program that everyone's like, how the fuck do I use this? I had to do a whole show where Doc trained me how to use the other program way back in the day. Well, you can go watch the video tutorials at beersmith.com and learn how to use this program quickly and easily. All right, so go to beersmith.com and do that now.
Hey, Justin, real quick, does Beersmith scale up as well, like 5
yes.
the barrel size?
Yes. Okay. It'll scale in both directions. And really, I just...
Do you say it goes both ways?
You know what the cool thing about Beersmith is? It goes both ways. And you know what? They're not ashamed to say it. Isn't
like
that right?
Some other people in this
Isn't
room.
Isn't that right,
what?
Brad? All right, so go check. You know what? I encourage anyone who has questions in the chat about it, I'm telling you, 21-day free trial. Do a couple batches. Just you don't even have to do a batch. You know what I used to do is when I first downloaded my first brewing software, I just kind of sat around at night making recipes and dicking around with it. I know fucking Chad does it too. Still,
no, it's like, not that weird.
It's like brewers. It's like brewers porn when you first get it because it's just fun.
Right.
You can kind of play with the numbers and see how things are going to work out, and it's just cool. So get your trial.
So Chad, 21-day trial thing. How many batches is that?
For Chad, that's a lot.
Like 42. Like,
not now that he's leaving us for the pro world, though.
You know what else is like brewers porn?
There's no stainless
porn.
Porn is also like brewers porn.
It's a good, Chad's going to the commercial world. It's a good thing Beersmith scales up.
That's right. He can use it over there. Shat the Trader can use it in his brew house, too. Well, you can't be Shat the Producer anymore.
Shat the Trader.
It's a really big step down.
To Shat the Trader.
Like Shat the Loser.
You can
can it just be Shat the Bed? And then that way...
You could still be Shat the Announcements guy.
Shat the Wetter.
Shat the Brewing Network liaison. Because you're still helping us with booking and ideas.
Can I have my own commercial?
Yes.
Awesome.
Yeah, absolutely.
His own announcer guy?
I'm going to build your site this week. ShatTheTrader.com.
Let me do the read, though.
It's going to be all filled with sightings of Shat at professional breweries and no longer homebrewing. It's going to be pictures of the rust building on our homebrew system here at home.
High-fiving just pro brewers.
Are
you homebrew? Oh, fuck off.
Somebody go build the Shat the Trader Facebook page right now. And let's see how many fans we can get on there. All right, let's take a quick break. We got some cool stuff to do when we come back. Scott, the producer.
I'm producing up a storm.
Now, he's got a new game for us that we're actually going to compete against each other here in the room. It's going to be fun. You're in on this, too.
Close off.
Guess what I'm...
It's not... I don't think it's as good as guess JP's number.
It doesn't have anything to do with me.
But it's good. And the winner of the game, we'll probably get a caller on the line, too. We'll have a listener play. And we'll all play for somebody in the chat room. We'll give away some Belgian candy sugar for that. Ooh. Also, I have to do our feedback. I didn't do that at the beginning.
Game and
And I think that's
sugar,
it.
Candy.
I think that's all we have to do, right? And then
I
we can get
so.
Out of here.
What? All right. Oh, we got Drunk of the Week, too.
Oh, of course. Scott, you can start taking... Don't take Drunk of the Week calls. We'll take a caller. Next caller gets to play the game with us.
Just tell him to buck up for it.
Hang in there. It's a session. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Brewcasters.
The Brewcasters.
On the Brewing Network.
years in the making. The best beer chef on planet Earth blows your mind and takes you on a food and beer journey like no other.
Really fun recipe. I took that beer and made it into salt and pepper prawns, and then we marinated it in that beer, so it gave all the pepper flavors and also accentuated the sweetness of the prawns.
From cooking Russian Imperial Stout truffles to amazing food and beer pairing.
I made a simple ice cream base, and then with that base, I added in hops, a hop infusion in 100 proof vodka, and used that as a vanilla extract.
The home-brewed chef will make cooking fun again, the way it should be done, with beer.
Why not make a beer that not only would go great with the dinner, but plan a whole dinner around it?
Barley wine prime rib, chocolate stout pudding, Doppelbock wild mushroom gravy, garlic IPA brined pork, and that's barely the beginning.
Cooking with the beer, pairing with the beer, taste it, and just think about what this is going to be good with. Put some in a sauce, substitute some of your liquid, use beer.
Tune in for the Home-Brewed Chef, only on the Brewing Network.
Hey, Push, the new brewery's looking good.
Thanks, Finn. Piece by piece.
Well, let's fire her up. Whoa! Is that a new kettle?
Yeah, just got it brand new, but paid half price.
What? And that blade scale?
40% off.
The new tap handle?
$5 instead of 13. Got a new regulator for the brew stand, too, but $5 instead of 25.
Dude, where are you stealing all this stuff from?
Where else? The More Beer deal of the day.
Announcing the Beer, and More Beer deal of the day. Every day, a new fantastic deal from big items to small that will blow you away. Boil kettles, carboy carriers, sterile siphon starters, digital timers. Watch morebeer.com every day for a new deal, and you just might find the item you've been waiting for at a price you cannot believe. Hurry, because stock is limited on most items.
And that sweet Guinness cap, let me guess.
The More Beer deal of the day.
Yeah, I knew it. Come on, let's brew something.
Find the More Beer deal of the day at morebeer.com. Celebrity voices impersonated.
What's up, dude? Why the long face?
Valentine's Day was awful. The World of Warcraft subscription was a strikeout.
Ooh, yeah, I hear ya. A couple of years ago, the new Hoover I got my wife was a bomb, too. But last year, I found playfulevenings.com.
What? What's that?
You know, Mrs. Badrock's store. It's awesome. Totally tasteful passion toys.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
What's a passion toy?
You know, it's a central aid in the bedroom.
Ooh.
All kinds of stuff. Massage oils, couples games, lingerie, and books.
Books?
Yeah. Where do you think Tickless Pickle came from?
Yeah, boy.
Seriously. Fun stuff, and Mrs. Badrock takes care of the BN Army with 10% off. Go to playfulevenings.com and click on Shop Online now. Put BN Army in the coupon code.
PlayfulEvenings.com. Thanks, Mrs. Badrock. You're a lifesaver.
BN Army, it's Valentine's Day all year long at PlayfulEvenings.com.
Do you support the Brewing Network? Do you brew your own? Are you looking for an economical, fun, and legal way to do both? Subscribe to Brew Your Own magazine and do just that. All year long, Brew Your Own will surprise you, entertain you, and educate you with articles on beer and brewing from authors like the Brewing Network's very own Jamel Zalishev and John Palmer. Each issue is a full pint of brewing techniques, homebrew stories, tips and photos, projects to make yourself, and recipes for the avid home brewer. Get your tough questions answered by Mr. Wizard, and polish your style accuracy with Jamel. A portion of every subscription goes to the Brewing Network, so subscribe today at BYO.com/Brewing Network or just click the BYO logo on the Brewing Network homepage and support a fantastic hobby and your favorite broadcaster. Brew Your Own, the how-to homebrew beer magazine.
There's an app on the iPhone for just about everything, including beer. Apps for finding a pint of beer. Apps that look like you're drinking a pint of beer. And now, there's an app for brewing a pint of beer. Introducing BrewPal, the most all-inclusive beer brewing app for professionals and hobbyists that fits in your pocket and goes wherever you do. Recipe formulation that can be imported and exported with a customizable database. Mash and sparge calculations, yeast pitching rates, carbonation tables, and more. Available right now for less coin than a pound of grain. See BrewPal in action at brewpal.info and download it for your iPhone at a special introductory price right now. BrewPal, all the brewing software you need, right in your pocket.
funny is brewers just say, yeah, I don't brew to style. I'm brewing my own beer. And it's like a German Pilsner, but it's black.
Yeah, it's a sports beer. You know.
The home of live beer radio. TheBrewingNetwork.com.
Because like beer, radio shouldn't suck. You're listening to
The Session.
You're listening to The Brewing Network. Because like beer, radio shouldn't suck.
All right, we got to go. Let's wrap this up real quick. We got shit to do. I'm busy tonight.
The delivery just got here.
We got to go. All right, here's what we're going to do. We're going to play a new game once the brewcasters sit down here. Is the caller for the game Moscow, or is the caller for Drunk of the Week?
For the game.
Okay.
We're going to take Drunk of the Week calls after.
So why don't you... Well, I guess we still need Doc to sit his ass down in here so that we can explain to him.
Why don't you do the feedback?
That's not what the game is. All right, I'll do feedback. How about that? Let's see. Who is that brought to us by today? Feedback is brought to you today by the 21st Amendment.
Oh, the 10th anniversary 21st Amendment, I believe.
That's right. I think there's an employee anniversary party down at the 2NA tonight, as a matter of fact. If you're an employee, you could have gone to that. You can now get Back in Black IPA in cans.
In what?
That's right.
We just had one
cans.
Here.
And, yeah, we have some in the fridge here, actually.
I just had one.
I like the Back in Black. Mm-hmm. And the can, it just looks awesome.
Yeah, it's cool.
You know, I think they could actually probably put a shitty beer in there and people would still buy it.
Yeah.
It looks so good. But it's not a shitty beer. It's a good beer. Brought to you by the 21st Amendment.
Oh, my God.
You've got mail.
Kick ass.
All right. Let's see. Get through this feedback quickly. Hello, BN team. I've listened to your shows on the importance of good fermentation to make great beer, and it's encouraged me to make a fermentation cupboard. I followed your suggestions on the Brew Strong podcast and have gone for a free refrigerator, et cetera, et cetera. He's very long-winded, excuse me. You've talked a lot about the importance of reducing lag time and pitching with an appropriate amount of yeast. I've been a big fan of dried yeast, Danstar, Nottingham, and Saffale, 05. I normally rehydrate the yeast as per the instructions. But I'm finding it usually takes around 8 to 12 hours for fermentation to kick in.
Got to use liquid yeast. Yeah.
So his question is, if I'm going to keep using dry yeast, you should probably start using White Labs liquid yeast. Now, but if you're going to keep using dry yeast, do I need to do a starter? Should I do a starter, and will that make the fermentation go better?
I don't know. I don't think you should worry about it too much.
8 to 12 is not bad.
No, it's not really that bad, and... they say dry yeast has a lot more cells anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, as long as he's getting down to pitching temp pretty quick, not having to wait an additional 24 hours and then 8 hours on top of that.
Right.
No.
Because, by the way, it's not really lag time that we talk about as a detriment. It's more just pitching the proper amount of yeast.
And not having it finish out where you want to.
Yeah.
That's more of an issue. Brew a lager and then call and cry.
At least
it's going to be like 24, 48 hours before you start seeing something.
But a lot of people are knocking out 90 degrees and not pitching for 24 hours or something.
Yeah.
So you don't think he needs to do a starter with dry yeast?
No.
Typically not.
No.
Okay. So many cells.
At least rehydrate it.
Yeah.
He did say he did that.
He did. Okay,
according
great.
To the instructions, he does rehydrate.
Then 8 to 12, put two packs in.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's an extra buck.
Yeah.
And then that way you're not doing a starter. But I would do a starter.
You would do.
Yeah, if I only wanted to do one packet of dry yeast, and really wanted to do it, because that's all I could get, and I still wanted to make starters, do it. It's
or
not going to hurt
you'd
anything.
Be okay
it's...
not doing a starter if you did two packs?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sure.
All right.
Fuck it.
Fuck it!
Well, fuck it.
Right, Scott?
Fuck.
The whole thing he said, he's a fan of dry yeast. If he wants to keep using dry yeast, either don't worry about the 8 to 12 hours, or...
Do a starter. Rehydrate it first, then do a starter.
If he wants to be an asshole and keep not supporting our sponsor, White Labs, go ahead.
Suck it.
Yep. Well, if he's a supporter of dry yeast, he's a supporter of limited selection.
Oh, wow. Any other insults you want to throw at the poor bastard?
Yeah, actually, you know what?
You have any trouble opening the package?
Yeah. How
is
does
it bread yeast?
How does he get his yeast when he takes his carriage down to pick up his cupboard? In the 1850s, do they have dry yeast or what?
Listen, he's from Derbyshire, UK.
Like you guys know where that is. Right.
By the way, nobody here could point out Derbyshire on a fucking map if it was spelled out.
Shire. It just sounds lame.
Middle of the Shires.
All right, James. Yeah. No, listen. Actually, I've heard a lot of great success things, stories with dry yeast. So keep at it.
Good things about Derbyshire.
Yeah, there's a lot of pitch good people that have come out of Derbyshire.
Like Frodo.
Like, yeah.
Dot the Shire.
All right. Let's see. Hey, Jay.
Derbyshire chicks.
Oh, here's one. Hey, Jay, I just got my new Hotvine t-shirt in the mail. It looks great. I also find a little bonus from you. A long, frizzy hair stuck under the shipping label. See the attached pic. You did attach.
Gross.
But this is like the second or third time this has happened.
Everybody's looking for that shit now.
Hey, Justin.
JP's beard.
Thanks for including that and not the short and curly kind.
Justin's losing his hair.
I'm not losing my hair.
You guys should probably just, you know, grab a hold of it and sell it on eBay later.
Yeah, I should. That's actually, it's Walker hair. It's always black and like kinked, but longer than a pube. More, it's closer to JP's beard, actually, than it is a pube.
You know, I worry about my beard, because my beard, you know, you kind of move it and it does fall out, and it lands on counters, and I worry that people are going to think it's really my pubes.
Especially if it, like, lands on your keyboard, and comes to use your keyboard, and
That's happened.
Oh, JP's been jerking it in the fucking office again.
Yeah, or I lean over someone's computer, like, show them something,
and
I look down, and I kind of wipe it off before they see it.
All right. So that was from Eric. He's New Englander. He's a PFC Northeast Division, and he says, suck it, Jibber.
That's appropriate.
Right to the point.
Now, here's one from the last show we did with the Whites, guys. Krezer writes in, you mentioned harvesting yeast from Hoegaarden, and there was some umming and ahring. While I do believe that the yeast in the bottle of Hoegaarden is specifically added at bottling to be swirled and drunk, it's different to the yeast that was used to brew the beer. Therefore, there's no point in harvesting the yeast from that beer.
Probably,
if the intention is to make a clone, just buy the correct liquid yeast. So he's sending that as a correction, but my memory isn't the best memory in the room, but I thought that's exactly what Whitey said. I thought Whitey said he offers that yeast through White Labs, and he's not sure that the bottled yeast is the same. Do you guys remember the conversation?
Well, first off, it's Hoegaarden.
Oh, sorry.
Excuse me. Ho.
Secondly, I think you're right, actually.
I thought Whitey said that.
It's a different
bottling
yeast, yeah.
A lot of breweries do that, and a lot of times they'll use lager yeast in the for the second pitch. It's clean. It'll ferment at a lower temperature, so you're going to actually get your fermentation, your carbonation done.
Right.
During cellaring.
During cellaring.
Yeah, well, but why would you have to add a different yeast during bottling at such a low-gravity beer anyway? Because typically people will do that with a higher-gravity beer, right?
They just want to do it.
That is not any kind of an answer.
No,
didn't I say I want to go, JP?
Maybe it's just...
Well, I don't care.
It's not the time.
Your priorities are not my priorities, okay?
All right, fine.
Well, ask why.
Blah, blah, blah.
I don't know.
Yet another reason to support my man, Chris White, and just buy the proper yeast.
What are you thinking?
That way I don't get yelled at.
Besides, his brother is about to have a baby named Terrence the White, I think was what we decided on in the end.
I think so.
That's actually the one that Mike White liked the best. Mike White yesterday opening gifts at his baby's shower in front of all of the family, and it's a big family, so there's like 20, 30 people in the room. Starts to explain the root of Terrence the White to everybody.
I can only imagine.
He's like, so, you know, it's this show that we do, and there's a guy on the show that they call Terrence the Black, and he's black, and he's on the show all the time, and a listener writes in, oh, you should name your baby Terrence the White. And, you know, me and Kate are the only ones laughing. Me, Kate, Mike, and Chris are laughing. The rest of the family's just staring at Mike White like he's a moron. Like,
I'm sure he gets that a lot.
Terrence the White.
Terrence T. White.
Yeah. All right. Hey, guys, love the show, especially the puking drunk tornado of the week.
That's a good one.
I was listening. This is probably for you.
There it goes.
That long, curly
This is probably
hair
for
thing.
You, Jipper. I was listening to the Recession Brewing Show, and I liked the discussion of bulk purchasing, which I try to do as much as possible, especially since I live 20 miles from wherever.
Oh, no, not 20 miles.
The real head.
I have a hard time finding cheap bulk grain. My closest homebrew store, which is 3.5 hours away, wants $65 for a 50-pound bag of two-row. And the online stores like Northern Brew and More Beer want about the same once you add shipping. Mm-hmm. Any ideas on how I can get it cheaper?
Nope.
Move.
It's about right, isn't it?
No, we talked about it tonight. You use a train.
That's how his homebrew is going to get it cheaper. Build a train depot.
Oh, this train spur.
So $65 a bag is about right.
Yeah. Ish.
I mean, shit, if he can get it delivered it's to still, his door for a 50-pound bag.
$45-$50 off the pound price.
Can he go in with a buddy or a few buddies like that, close by? Like,
get buck a pound. Pound.
Ish.
Ish.
Okay.
You know, or $1.50 a pound.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
So no suggestions on cheaper.
No.
Okay. Sure. That was from Seabass, and he says, P.S. Suck at JP.
Well, now I'm glad I didn't answer him, because I do know the answer, but I'm not going to tell him.
There's no answer for you.
That is that's the most fifth grade thing you've said tonight.
Well, you know, fall right in line.
Is he smarter?
Let's see. Here is one, a suggestion. I think that the Belgian candy sugar giveaway should include...
Belgian candy sugar?
It would be enhanced if you played Pour Some Sugar on Me by Def Leppard.
Oh.
Even better if JP sang falsetto during it.
I don't even know what falsetto means.
That means that high false...
Oh. Is that high? False.
That's Blobber. That's not me.
It could be you.
Could be you.
About to give away some dark candy sugar, courtesy of Dark Candy Inc. Right here on the Brewing Network.
Callers to the main phone line.
Put your hands together for JP.
Center stage.
Caller number 997 gets a win right now.
Candy stage five.
Yeah.
Stripper music, isn't it?
Stripper music. Yeah. I just read about it.
Yeah, right. Never been there.
Nope.
Saw something on TV about it.
Yeah. Just read about it. What is your wife listening tonight?
Who knows?
Let's see. Hey, Justin, I'm a BYO subscriber, but I'm starting to get renewal notices from BYO, and I'd like to renew through the BN because you guys get a cut. I don't see an option to do that from the banner on the homepage. Any ideas on how to set that up? That's from JD. Yeah, I don't know. If we can do renewals, it's catching up with me now, man.
I think we've talked about it before, and I think if you just click through the banner so they can track it, I think you just say
it'll
renewal
automatically
and
renew
in the comment. Yeah, I think it automatically adds on.
Just
I'll tell you what. Hey. If I feel like doing anything this week, I'll email Brad over at BYO and
BYO.
We'll see what's up with the Mormon broads. And I'll
just
ask.
Just not drinking.
Sorry about that Prop 8 thing.
I'll ask if we do renewals and try to get back to you. Okay, hello General Asshat and the Ass Haitians, and a special how you doing to JP.
I don't know what I mean. I don't.
How you doing?
Tour writes and he says, now don't get me wrong, I love boobies. But ever since my dad died last year from lymphatic leukemia, it's really started to piss me off that the only cancer ever getting exposing because of its sexiness is boob cancer. Why aren't there any beer fundraisers, for instance, for prostate cancer or leukemia or lymphatic cancer or colon cancer or skin cancer or jaw cancer or cervical cancer? We get the idea, Tor. What are you, feeling depressed today? You got to name every cancer in the world?
He's European.
I admit that the beer for colon cancer doesn't really ring the same way as beer for boobs does. But does it really need to have a sexy slogan to have people in the craft beer industry throw money at it?
Yeah.
Beer for balls.
No pants, Bruce Strong, and all that jazz. I want to point out first, before we comment.
We could do colon cancer. You already have a brown beard.
A brown beard?
Remember the pink?
Oh, that's true. I don't have to dye my beard. That's true.
I actually do because it's a lot of
I'll have you know, Tour, that the Brewing Network's 6th anniversary party, which your immigrant ass was at in Minnesota, was actually a fundraiser for beer, for pints for prostates, which does have a catchy name.
It's got a ring to it.
And it's sexy.
Really? So we did give money to pints for prostates. Proceeds went to that from the BNA 6.
Five.
How many
people
thought it was pints for prostates?
Five. That one. Five.
Slow down.
We'll do that at 6 as well.
You know, I had
and I don't. Maybe we'll do one beer for assholes.
Yeah,
one
6.
Ales for assholes.
Ales for assholes. And we'll do one for colon cancer because clearly, at least one of us in this room is going to get ass cancer.
For sure. JP, that's flow. Too. Ales for assholes.
You know, it's pretty good, right?
That's really good.
Or assholes for ale for assholes.
that's they the all work group. For me.
A real assholes for ales.
Asshole ale.
Yeah.
All right,
I had an idea for a show for Tour.
Okay.
A BN show.
Yeah.
It was just for him to talk about how things are going in the Netherlands or Denmark or wherever the fucking where he's from. But we would call it, it'd be 3 hours, and we'd call it a 3-hour tour.
Not bad.
What do you think about that?
It's not bad.
Where are the crickets when we need it?
Hmm. Well, at that way.
They're migrating, Chad.
I wanted to cricket it, but that's not bad. It's good. It's cheesy, but. Let's, Scott, the producer, is that good enough to warrant
Are we greenlighting this?
A laugh, or is that total shit?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, you go with the alliteration consistently, which
right,
is good.
Right.
I don't know.
By good, do you mean like great?
No, I mean good.
Oh.
Let's give it 10 seconds.
I think we should throw around some other ideas before we greenlight the first thing we hear.
Mm.
You know, I forgot, one of our, I don't know if he's from the Netherlands or where the fuck he's from.
You mean like where Peter Pan's
from?
Could
be from Wisconsin.
But while we're in the feedback section, I had a part of a song, a new Brewing Network song that was written to us. He hasn't finished it, but he sent us the first verse. It's based on Bob Dylan's Subterranean Homesick Blues, which is a great, wonderful song.
Sure.
So let's see. Let me play that for you while we're here.
Oh, thanks.
Thanks a lot.
Just is in a basement, cleaning up an orange piece on the pavement. Thinking about the gate prints, patrol in the trench coat, flame out laid off. Says he's got a stock sparge, wants to get some run off. Sully's here and he's double bear. And Doc fears holes and long stripping potion. Where to do what John says on the Bruce Strong. The crazy caller with a fucked up batch. He wants green bills and metric and not in pound.
It's not bad. Especially because you can hardly understand him, just like Dylan.
He sounds just like Dylan. He did a great job.
That's pretty fucking good, right?
Yeah. Great.
I could play that bass line at the anniversary show.
Well, he wrote it to me saying, I'll never finish this song, so here's what I have. And I wrote back, you got to fucking finish that.
Yeah. Wants the grain bill and metric. And
not in pounds.
That's awesome.
I loved it. All right.
The guy speaks the truth.
Come on. Another pearl.
I got a lot of email about this week, people warning me. People are always looking out for the BN, and somebody found an interview with Palmer on some YouTube video called Take Some Advice.
What the?
And a bunch of people were writing me like that basically the guy just stole audio from Bruce Strong and plugged it into his own format and put up a video on YouTube like he had interviewed Palmer. Well, I called Palmer, and it turns out Palmer actually did the interview.
Oh.
So all of you that are sending me the emails about that, it turns out he did the real interview. Now, I'm not going to promote the interview very much because it turns out the guy's a real fucking asshole, the Take My Advice
Palmer?
Guy. No. I wish Palmer was a real asshole.
A little more of an asshole. Like,
wouldn't that be fun if Palmer could? I don't think that he knows how to be an asshole.
I want
to
see him bust my balls once.
Oh, yeah. I would love it if he would just come in here and go, you know what? Gosh darn it, you guys are jerks. It's about what it would sound like. No, I think the interview guy is a douche. Anyway, you can stop sending me emails. It wasn't copyright infringement or anything else. He did the interview without my permission, I'll have you know.
See, I would never do that to
you. Of course you wouldn't.
Right.
Palmer, thinking now that he's a big author.
Tough to turn down a million
kind of
dollars.
Was a big, now that he's a big-time star,
Big-er.
He's allowed to do whatever he wants.
Bigger.
Without checking with us first.
Without checking in here. Call your ass in here before you do an interview.
I heard he was naked during that interview.
Naked! You believe that?
Yeah.
We only require no pants here.
Right.
You went all the way with those guys.
Yeah.
John writes in, where do the show ideas go now that Shat has gone pro?
Same place as before.
To Justin.
Well, I'll tell you this. So Shat is still helping us with show ideas. So, you know, those of you who have the old address, that's fine. You can send them to Shat. But you can also send ideas to Scott@thebrewingnetwork.com.
What?
Scott@thebrewingnetwork.com, because he's going to help doing some booking, too. So,
wow.
You could do that.
I thought you changed it to Shat the Trader at thebrewingnetwork.com.
Hey.
No? I should. No one will be able to remember that.
Yeah, they will. You'll make sure.
This is going to be the first beer I brew.
The Trader. Pale ale.
Okay, here, guys. Quick question about brew kettle size. I'm in the market for a new one. My old one's is only good for 5-gallon batches. In general, my batch size will be 5 or 10 gallons. I have a choice between a 13-gallon or a 26-gallon. Mm. So my question is there any disadvantage in going too big?
Yes.
No.
I love it.
Definitive advice.
It depends on.
Let's get both perspectives.
It depends on the shape of it. If it's shaped more like a soup can as opposed to a tuna fish can, there's a big difference on that one.
So if it's tall and deep,
that's not as good as
short and fat.
Short and fat. Yep.
He needs an 18-gallon kettle for a 10-gallon batch.
Yeah.
So the other one won't work anyway.
Anything else is going to be problematic.
So his 13-gallon won't work.
No,
I've got a 28-gallon kettle, and I can barely do 20 gallons in that one.
Yeah.
And be happy with it.
So you guys all recommend the 26. Jipper, what's the problem with too big a kettle?
Well, you get... what really matters is height to width, not surface area. So you want a kettle that has a proper height to width.
Okay.
Because if you have too big of a kettle, you get more boil off. There's you still have a huge burner under there. You're getting it to a boil faster. You're driving off a lot more.
Okay.
Yeah.
So kind of what Doc's saying too, we need to know more about the width of this. Is it a tuna can or is it a soup can?
Yep. Yeah. I mean, yeah. He's probably talking about like the heavy duty kettles that Morbeer has because everybody talks about those.
Of course.
Japan. So he's going to be doing a 5 gallon batch.
Not in the 20s. Yeah.
Is that the gist?
He
of it?
Said in or general he'll be doing 5 to 10 gallons.
Tell you what.
Yeah. He could go the middle size and be totally fine.
Okay. You get the bigger kettle, you probably will never do a 5 gallon batch again.
So 5 gallon batches kettle. Are stupid.
But yeah, you will never do it again.
Once just
you
get the big kettle.
Once it's easy to do 10 gallons, done deal.
What were the two sizes
split
he was looking
batches,
at?
Split batches. I mean,
13 and 26.
Yeah.
13. He could do
13
it.
For a 5 gallon no,
get,
batch.
Get the 26.
The pre-boil in a 10 gallon batch is usually about 15.
Yeah.
To some people.
Way undersized.
Not to me.
Okay.
Well, yeah. Another thing.
26, move on.
Yep, yeah. Exactly.
Because shove it up your ass.
All right. Feedback was brought to you today by... the 21st Amendment.
Oh!
563 Second Street,
awesome.
Just two blocks from Giants Park. And you can now get Back in Black IPA in cans.
In what?
In cans.
Cans. Everyone likes it in the can.
I do.
Cool.
I think you should put that joke in the can.
Justin's in a basement, cleaning up an orange piece on the pavement. Thinking about the gate prints, patrolled in the trench coat, flame out laid off. Says he's got a stock spot, wants to get some runoff. Sully's here and needs a double beer. And Doc fears holes and lost ripping potion. Where to do what John says on the Bruce Strong. The crazy caller with a fucked up batch. He wants green pills and metric and not in pound.
I feel like that would work really well if you're watching the video. Had the lyrics on the bottom with that bouncing smiley face goes along.
I agree with you. Yeah.
That should be a contest.
That'd be really
fun. Who can transcribe the lyrics, post them in the forum first, wins the date with Scott.
And get an 80% correct.
95.
Well, at least
200.
80%. Yeah.
Okay. All right, here's the deal. We're not going to do the game tonight. We're going to do it next week.
Next week.
Because you got to go to...
I got to go play. No.
We got to go.
I'm the goalie.
Give Drunk of the Week. Caller, who's on the air? Caller? Still there?
It's Mrs.
Hello?
Oh, there she is.
Who is it?
It's Miss Blomax.
Hi, Miss Blomax. Drunk of the Week, Mrs. Blomax.
Yeah.
Hi, Mrs. Blomax.
Always.
Hi.
Hi.
What's happening?
How you doing?
I'm doing good.
Awesome.
You drinking again?
Sort of. Not really, though. Not tonight.
All right. So you just were calling to play the game.
I've had a little bit, yeah. Calling to play the game.
Okay. Well,
let's play the game.
We don't have time for the game.
Yeah, we'll do it next week.
Scott's
got
to go.
It's going to be a good one, and I got lots of stuff for it. So.
No game.
Scott, I don't know if you ever heard the show, but
the fuck
we
are you
typically
about?
Go 5 hours.
Yeah. I can't. I'm the goalie for my team, so it's not like I can't show.
You know what?
I got to go.
You being there or not, there will probably be the same. Same thing.
Thanks, Dick.
Yeah. Just as many goals.
Leading the league in save percentage.
A league of one.
Yeah.
Hey, if your forwards are good, they don't even need you.
And if your D's better.
By the way, we just learned what a nerd Moscow is. He has stats for his his amateur hockey league. He's like, I am leading the league in...
save percentage. And he's like goals against average, by the way.
He's like that dude in beer league who's like keeping his own stats. Johnny Tremaine.
Come on, show us your
batting
hockey card. You have a hockey card, don't you?
Justin,
don't you have your own card?
It's only week one.
Yeah, I'm leading the league.
Yes.
I'm leading the league in practice.
All right, Mrs. Blomax.
You win.
What, I got to give you something or something because you didn't?
No, she was calling to play the game.
I like the game.
We can get her on the line next week. She can play this next week, right?
Yeah. All right. How about you call back next week? You'll be our contestant for the game next week.
All right, I'll call back next week.
All right, that sounds good. Thank you, Mrs. Blomax.
Drink more.
We love you.
Love you, too.
I thought she was, crying for a second or not.
Wow.
I can't play.
I can't figure it. She kind of sounds when she's drunk, she sounds drunk. When she's sober, She sounds kind of like half a retard.
Yeah. Nah. It's like before Mississippi, before she answers your question.
Like maybe she's just really drunk.
You think so?
Well,
and
I mean,
drunk.
There's two different, yeah.
She probably lives far away, so it has to go a long distance to come.
So you guys aren't, you're not thinking that she has like an extra chromosome.
Trisomy.
So mean.
I'm asking.
Well, only when her and Mr. Blomax get down, you know what I'm saying?
There's
a bunch of chromosomes.
All right, I'll just take this call straight away. Okay. Caller.
Straight away.
Who are we talking to?
What's up? This is Jeff.
What's up, Jeff? How are you, man?
Whoa.
He's all happy.
I'm drunk of the week, man.
What have you had?
Fucking A.
What have I had? I've had lots of Lagunitas IPA.
Nice. How many is lots?
Lagunitas IPA.
How many is lots?
Lots, like enough to where I'm not going downstairs to count the bottles.
Ooh, that's a lot.
Slim Pickens. Is that where the new bottles are?
All right, what else have you had?
Lots of Lagunitas IPA.
I bet you he shops at Costco.
I do shop at Costco.
They started carrying it. It's great.
Did you just exhale your bong load, too? Was that what that was?
No, I'm not going there.
Sounded like it to me.
No, just lots of Lagunitas IPA.
Officially.
So wait, what are you drinking there?
Lots of Lagunitas IPA. Okay.
Oh, man. That office is starting to spin a little bit because I'm sitting in my Lazy Boy.
Oh,
in your office.
Do you have the remote control handy?
No, I'm in the office.
Is the fire lit?
I'm in the fucking house. All right, Jeff, you're drunk of the week this week.
Oh, wow.
Send me an email to justin@thebrewingnetwork.com and we'll get you all set up. Okay. Is that about it? Let's see.
Are drunks of the week usually that articulate?
Oh, also, no. Jeff, no. He didn't really earn it. He won't get a medal. He'll just get some candy sugar from a courtesy of Dark Candy Inc. Wonderful company helping you make Belgian beer the authentic way.
Well, if we call him drunk of the week, he needs a medal.
They definitely keep it real.
D-O-D-T-W.
I can do whatever I want.
Where was Jeff from?
I don't know.
From the office.
Lagunitas.
He came from the kitchen of the office.
The office.
You want to take one more from Illinois and see if he's drunker?
Yeah.
Drunkerid?
Let's do it.
Caller, who are we talking to?
Hello.
Hi.
Oh, hey.
It's a lady.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Is this Mrs. Blomax again?
No.
Who are we talking to?
This is Michelle.
Hi, Michelle. Where are you calling from?
Illinois.
From Illinois. All right. And what are you calling for?
I'm just calling for the drunk of the week.
Turn your radio down. Will you do that for me? Your computer, whatever.
What?
Huh? Who?
She's trying. Come on.
How?
Come on.
What?
There we go. Thank you.
Well, you got to like right click and.
All right, Michelle. What have you had to drink tonight?
We brewed our own cider and
Cider.
First the earth cooled and then the dinosaur.
We had a lot of cider.
All right. So
we also had Salvation Belgian style ale.
Yeah, that'll fuck you up.
Who's giving you this information? It might be faster if we just talk to him.
Yeah.
Good point, Jim.
Not as sexy, but maybe a little faster.
Yeah. Okay, go on. What else?
Yeah, I'm here. What's going on over there?
No, you're supposed to say something like,
"What are you wearing?"
You know, guys, I can hear you. I'm standing right here.
Yeah. What's your boyfriend's name?
Husband/boyfriend.
My husband's name's Richard, and he's the brew guy. I'm the brew bitch.
Oh, we know Richards.
Whoa.
Ah.
Richard?
Is it Richard or Britchard?
I think it's Dick.
Richard.
Yeah, but Dick, yeah.
It's Dick.
When he's in trouble, do you call him Dick?
He brews, and I freaking clean.
Oh.
Whoa.
Whoa. All right.
She's wife of the week.
Sanitized.
And sanitize.
She's the wife of the week.
Yeah, what else do you do?
I'm the sanitizer of it all, and he's the brew person of it all.
So
of it all.
So when he makes a mess, you clean it all up.
Pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of shitty.
Well, you know, instead of like brew bitch, there is kind of a word that we like to use that wraps that all up. It's called wife.
Really?
Whoa. Huh?
What did he say? That's uncalled for.
He just said, shove it up your ass.
Shove it up your ass.
All right, you want to take it away from Jeff and give it to Michelle?
Yeah.
So do I.
Yeah.
I mean, she's drunker, isn't she?
She's the drunkest of them all.
And the part where she owns her role as the cleaning bitch,
right?
I think
that's helpful.
No, not the cleaning bitch. I'm the brew bitch. Get
the
it right.
Bitch. Sorry.
Cleaning.
Jesus.
They're very different.
The cleaning bitch put me in my place.
I have a feeling Scott's...
I'm sorry, the brew
She's
bitch.
Had lots of cider and stuff.
I have a feeling Scott's used to being yelled at by drunk women.
She's had a lot of Richard inside
her.
Yeah,
your mom's had lots of insider.
My mom's dead, Scott. Way to bring it up.
Great.
Way to bring it up.
Now he's going
to
cry again, Scott. Great.
Welcome to the show.
Perfect. Great.
Great.
Now, see, you can't joke about
Should
JP's
I chase him?
Dead. No, we just let him go.
Screw it.
We yell at you now and we let him go. Right. Scott, I can't believe you made a dead mom joke.
Jeez.
This is uncalled for.
Unbelievable.
You guys are having too much fun over there.
All right, Michelle, you're our drunk of the week. Send me an email to Justin at thebrewingnetwork.com. Yeah, you're still. Send me an email to Justin at thebrewingnetwork.com. You're drunk of the week.
I don't know. Are you?
We'll give you some dark candy sugar. All right. Now we have a real drunk of the week, and I don't have to feel bad about it, and et cetera, et cetera. Okay. Next week, we have Nicole Ernie along with Ray Daniels on the program, and we're going to be talking about tasting beer.
Who's Nicole? Is that a Cicerone?
Is she a Cicerone?
Master.
Yes, she is. Yes.
Where's Randy the Cicerone?
He is a Cicerone.
Why
he's around.
We have to change Randy the Mexican's name to Randy the Cicerone.
No, Cicerone Mexican.
Randy the Cicerone. Randy the only Mexican Cicerone.
We've just been calling him Randy the new sissy.
That's good, too. That's good.
Mexerone. All right.
So next week, we've got Nicole Ernie and Ray Daniels on to talk about tasting beer. Because, you know, there's more to it than just drinking, JP. I don't know if you knew that.
I don't know anything about it.
There's a whole
I know nothing.
A whole thing to it. What else do you need to know?
New
Paxton Show, Thursday, August 26th at 6 p.m. It's the Home Brewed Chef, and we'll be talking about cooking with beer. Don't forget to support our sponsors, especially the sponsor of this program, Beer, Beer, and More Beer. You can go to morebeer.com. They are the official session sponsor and our favorite place to shop locally and online. Plus, Chris Graham is not a douche.
And don't forget about the Forum Comp. Get in.
Oh, yes.
Giving away a
More
conical.
Beer Forum Comp. You can win a 14-gallon conical.
Get in on that.
When?
Crazy nuts.
When?
August 14th is the cutoff, so get in.
Oh, coming up.
Oh, God.
Yes, Tasty?
I drank 41 ounces of beer tonight.
41? How many beers is that?
It's like 2.5.
Did anybody guess 2.5 beers?
No, everyone went way over that number.
So no winner.
No, everyone was like
nobody
6.
Got the under.
See, this is why the Guess What Tasty's Drinking Game is going to be tricky.
The lowest guess was 4.
You never know.
The lowest guess was 4.
How about guess how much
drinking.
All right. Thanks, everybody, and we'll see you next week. Did I forget anything?
No, you're good.
All right. Out of here. Later.
Don't you give me that American truth for the one of real homebrew. Homebrew. Don't you really love that homebrew? Can't get enough of it. Homebrew. It blows my mind. I love homebrew all of the time. Yeah, I think I'll have it. Well, I'll have that one right now. A bark will do me when the skies are gray. I'll take a Belgian brew at a time, and the women think the lambic fine. But don't you give me that American crude, boys, I want a real homebrew. Homebrew, don't you really love a better homebrew? Can't get enough of it. Homebrew, it blows my mind. I love homebrew all of the time. Yeah, I think I'll have me, well, I'm the one right now.
the love of that homebrew. Can't get enough of it. Homebrew, it blows my mind.